Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on July the 12th of 2017. It's Nick and Chris and nobody else.
But that's not what our overlay says. It says there's someone in there.
What? No, that's impossible. It lies.
Why would it do that? It's never lied to us before.
Yes, it has.
When?
It's trustworthy.
I don't know. I feel like we should trust it.
There's examples to account for, honestly.
All right, maybe that one time it tricked us into going into a wooden crate and then mailed us off to Abu Dhabi, like some kind of normal Garfield routine, but that was only once. I think we should trust it this time and accept that Annalise might be joining us for this episode.
Just maybe.
I guess we could just act like we normally do. And then if we get to Black Clover and all of a sudden there's someone shouting down our opinions, then we'll know for sure.
if we get to Black Clover later, we just start saying like, I don't know, I'm just not interested. You just take in the background, wrong! Wrong! I just start hearing rocks hitting my window. Like, what is that coming from? I see, and I look over in like her camera. I just see her with a slingshot point at the window. I'm like, wow, that's an amazing aim.
I do it for Black Clover. That's all. Any other series, you know, it doesn't work. This is my magic, slingshot magic.
It's how I determine which one of you is doing it. If it happens during Black Clover, it's you. If it's when we're discussing Shudon, then it's Jeff.
I think we might have earned an enemy for life because of what you said about Shudon.
Yeah, Jeff liked my post at one point on Twitter about it. That means we're still friends. Can't possibly mean he's just gathering ammo for the day he eviscerates me.
Well.
How are you doing, Annalise, by the way?
Passable.
Passable?
Yeah. It's Comic-Con next week, so things are kind of spiraling towards chaos.
Mm.
Good chaos. I mean, it's Comic-Con, but...
Spiraling towards chaos would be the perfect first single off a great new metal band's album.
Mm-hmm. And then after that one, they never live up to it.
That's ironically the song name.
Never live up to it.
They're like, man, spiraling into chaos is great, but never living up to it, man, that was the title was way too on the nose. It's like they knew.
I don't know why we named the other 10 songs on the album Never Live Up to It. Not even like parts 1 through 11, just never live up to it. like various annoying sounds, like a cat scratching a chalkboard, children crying.
They came in literally just with one good song idea, and then all the rest were just very obvious, like, demonstrations of the fact they had no other music in mind. They were like, not as good as the last one, phoning this one in, eh. one song is just entitled Shoulder Shrug. Any cosplays in mind, by the way, Annalise, for Comic-Con?
Yeah, I'm doing three. I'm doing Naofumi.
Let me guess. Okay. You're going to be going as Strength, the boat stand of the orangutan Captain Tennille from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 3.
It was supposed to be a surprise, damn it.
I'm
ruined it, Chris.
I have really good intuition.
Oh my god. Well, spoilers. There we go.
I'm looking forward to you walking around a convention as an enormous full-size cruise liner that you can control all aspects of.
I'll just be in the bay. Let me in!
You went the extra mile to actually include a killer orangutan inside of your costume somewhere that people have to avoid.
There's great personal harm. I'm a true cosplayer. She's very like, realistic.
Yeah, like, I'm a perfectionist. I'm a method cosplayer, actually.
I've been living with an orangutan inside of me for weeks.
Oh, God.
now that we all have that image in our heads. So yeah, Annalise is joining us to talk about manga this week. We do have, well, we would be one short this week, but, it also turns out that, oh gosh, what is it? What's the monthly Jump series? Cause it used to be Jump Square. It's not called that anymore.
No, it is.
It is Jump Square?
There's a couple different ones, but yeah, Jump Square is the main monthly one.
Was there Ultra Jump at one point?
Ultra Jump is still around. Young Jump is still around.
Was there a Jump Plus?
Yeah, that's the online.
Okay.
So, because of all that stuff, this week's edition of Weekly Shonen Jump is about 5,000 pages. fortunately, we don't cover all of those series, but we do have more to talk about, so essentially that leaves us with pretty much a full load this week. So, yeah. We want to talk about people with weirdly large eyes and stuff?
No, I think we're going to talk about something else this week.
Okay.
Guys, what movies have we seen recently? Let's dish on some movie talk.
I guess the most recent one that I watched was probably Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders.
All right, well, this topic's dead. Let's talk about baseball, guys. What are you guys thinking about the current baseball season?
Well, the All-Star Game was yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, God.
All I saw was the one player from the A's. The A's are my team. The one player from the A's that was on the All-Star team hit two singles. Yeah, good job, Yonder! I'm very proud, okay? That's all I watched of the All-Star game.
For a moment, I thought you were going to not know the guy's name, though. So you're like, the one guy from the team I like. Go, A player!
No, you can't forget this guy's name because it's Yonder Alonso. Like,
that's a pretty great name.
Who can name their kid Yonder? It's so good.
That's the kind of name that when you're
hey,
given
Yonder,
it...
Hey, Yonder, go over there so you can be over Yonder.
It's that kind of name, though, that when you give it to a kid, the kid's like, well, fuck, now I can't suck. I can't just fall into a thing like a middle management job because it's just going to be crushing. I need to be a music star.
I'll be disgraced to all Yonders, meaning me only.
Yeah, like I got to be a race car driver or like an astronaut rock star or I got to get like made into a comic book character or something. I can't just be Yonder who... drives the school bus at times, you know?
Drive it off Yonder.
Well, you know what? Actually, that's not a bad name. Actually, he brands that, makes it Yonder's Trips, or a trip, a trip out Yonder way.
Over Yonder.
There you go. Oh, and it's
like, he's got a future after baseball.
It's like Uber, but for school children and without their parents' permission. So it is egregiously illegal. But it's still an innovation.
Do they pay him in like cafeteria food and lunch money? Like what is this?
Yeah, it's
they
like
they pay him in lunch money against their will.
He doesn't open the door, Yonder. Give me that milk money.
Yonder wants his money.
Please, I gotta get to class.
Yonder want your book back. Give me your book back. That Teenage Turtles. I love Teenage Turtles. Give me that. Yonder love Teenage Turtles.
Wait a minute. Why are they also mutants and ninjas? Fuck this.
Don't like this part. Yonder hate this now. Throws it out the window.
It's a reboot trash.
All right, we can talk about manga now.
Oh, no. I kind of want to talk about Ninja Turtles now. All right. So we're going to start off the recap portion with the manga recap. Like we normally do. With My Hero Academia. It turns out that this whole thing with, going into the, Shie Hasekai's lair is, just the land of flashbacks and character backstory and, text message notification noises. I really wasn't really expecting all the stuff that we've been getting about these characters, specifically in terms of flashbacks, but it looks like we're getting a fairly long one out of Kirishima, starting this week. So, we begin with our chapter, which is number 144, Red Riot, where we left off last time. Fat Gum had absorbed the power of their enemy's attacks and was preparing to concentrate them all into his fist in order to strike back. Kirishima managed to take a blow just in order to allow Fat Cub to have the time to prepare that attack. But we don't get to see how that turns out.
I have to interrupt. I mentioned last week that once we saw what Fat Gum's true appearance looked like, Annalise would have some kind of, like, term for it, like he's a pretty good boy or something like that. What's the term you used? What thought went into your mind when you saw that Fat Gum, when he lost his fat and became svelte, was a super cute hottie?
Well, my thought was, oh no, he's hot. And he's very much an ikemen, though.
Ikemen, though?
Ikemen.
Ikemen.
Yeah.
So is it like the Slender Man? Like he haunts you?
No. An ikemen, here you go. I'll get you a definition. It's just a good looking guy.
Okay.
It comes from, ikeru, which is cool, good, exciting, and, either men from men or from the character for face.
Gotcha. So like, I am an ikemen.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, alright, cool. I'm gonna like get that tattooed. What's the kanji look like? I'm sure when I go there, they'll know.
Dumbass.
He's a hottie though. Like, stupidly good looking. What is this?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of weird. It's because the kind of attitude that he has about, you know, being a real man and stuff. I don't know. I didn't really imagine that he would have the flowing blonde locks under that cap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a...
Like, I would be totally fine if he turned into, you know, this, like, burly motherfucker. But, whatever. So, I still like that he has the same teeth.
Yeah.
So we get a Kirishima flashback for the rest of the chapter and beyond. As he goes into it, Kirishima just, you know, thinks to himself that, the only reason that he leapt into action was simply that, you know, I was just scared. Again. And, we cut to, I guess just a year or so ago, because it's when he was in middle school, tried to be awesome and manly and stuff, protect a kid who was being bullied, and unfortunately, his quirk, meant that he would just, you know, get hit in the face, and his face would be hard, and so he'd be fine. They'd be like, anyway, we're going back to the bullying this guy now.
Yeah, the poor hedgehog boy whose power is to turn leaves into, I mean, they don't specify, they just say other things, which makes me think, like, he's like, yeah, I mean, I could turn my leaves into nuclear warheads if I need to.
You've got a quirk, yeah, specifically, you've got a quirk that can transform leaves into other things, right? So turn these into 10,000 yen bills! And he's like, that would be wrong! Also, it wears off quickly.
They're like, shut up! Shut up, Sonic Boy! And they're like, I just chose that name! One day I'm gonna be the fastest hedgehog around!
Because using my quirk, which allows me to turn leaves into other things.
That's the trick, Nick. He's not actually super fast. He's just making leaves that make everything else around him feel like they're moving slower.
I guess he could turn leaves into some sort of super drug if he could turn them into other things.
No, he just turns them into speed lines so he can walk normal. Oh. Going super fast.
Perfect.
He runs by everyone that just leaves a bunch of speed lines behind him. And they're like, it didn't feel like he was moving that fast, but man, he must have.
He's just jogging along at a below average pace, but he turns leaves around him into sound effects. So he goes,
I do want to stress, because I can already see it popping up in the chat, I do recognize it's a Tanuki reference, but I see it and I want to imagine Sonic the Hedgehog on it, so.
He does have the spiky hair, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he does have that 90s attitude to him. But like the 90s attitude where he's the kid being picked on and the 90s movie hero is supposed to come up and save him.
And we have determined that he's got to go fast.
So. Yeah. Who was the nerdy kid in Recess, Nick? I'm sure you watched it, right?
That's Griswold.
There you go. He's like the Griswold, the 90s Griswold.
All right.
Yeah. He does actually look a lot like him with glasses and everything, and yeah.
See, I knew Nick would know that nerdy reference.
Whatever. Nick, name the kid that you identified in the cartoon you watched when you were a kid. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I was like, Nick will know
Whatever
who that...
you are, Nick.
Nick will know who that loser is. I could call on him for that. Meanwhile, I was the cool kid. Like a Billy, like the Blue Ranger. He was super cool. You know, wearing overalls all the time and shit. Like cool dudes did back in the 90s.
Overall? Well, I mean, I guess if you were super into Super Mario Brothers, maybe?
Not a whole lot.
You were just talking about how great it would be if you were Sonic. So Kirishima, you know, his friends are just being like, come on, just leave it alone. You're not going to make any difference in this. Kirishima's like, as long as a man's got a chivalrous heart, his quirk's got nothing to do with it. That's what Chivalrous Hero Crimson Riot always said. Tries to leap into action, but before he can interfere again, instead, Ashido shows up. I don't know if they ever actually established that Ashido and Kirishima kind of knew each other prior to the series. Was that ever a detail that they noted?
I don't remember them mentioning it.
I feel like it may have come up at some point, or who knows, it may have even been mentioned in like a volume extra detail sort of thing or something like that. Mm-hmm.
But this was something that I was like, oh, okay, here you are. And you don't really see what she says to them, but she's, you know, she scolds them, and then after a few minutes, they're suddenly getting along, and then everybody involved, Ashido, the bullies, and the bullied kid, all start breakdancing together. Breakdancing.
It's that series of panels of like, oh, they're all friends now? Now they're breakdancing together. They're leaving. It's like, I wish I could be in that moment of just the spontaneous breakdancing that happened.
How? I mean, like, tell me your secret.
It's presumably never gonna be mentioned. Because she was never going to be like, how did you make them all break? Like, what led to that? And she's just like, yeah, I kind of had to be there, I guess. He's like, I was!
And I like how when they're breakdancing, it's not now they're breakdancing, it's now they're breakdancing. There's a period. like, oh yeah, she does this, whatever, you know, like.
Now they're breakdancing together.
Yeah, like, yeah, is this just like something she does? Can we see more of it?
That's her real power. The whole, like, shooting acid thing is just the front. Her real power is to bring out the spirit of dance.
All I can say is the real power of friendship.
Oh.
So, Kirishima's friends bring up, oh, hey, yeah, Ashido, yeah, she's applying to UA. And, you know, she's got awesome physical reflexes. She's great with people. She's got a strong, flashy quirk. And, you know, people expect different things from heroes nowadays. It's, you know, all about being entertaining and stuff, and as opposed to just working hard and stuff like that. See, Chris, you've got to be marketable. It doesn't matter if you go on the indie scene and do a bunch of flippy-doo shit. You've got to have a look. You've got to have the it factor. You've got to be able to connect with the WWE universe.
You've got to have the overalls.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Overalls are very important. They make you, I don't know.
I mean, if you don't want to be here, then take off your overalls, bust yourself back down to some bingo halls and VW centers.
Well, you can enjoy your plain black trunks and your kick pads, but the real stars will be up here entertaining the millions of people with our overalls.
Now I just want like a collection of Photoshop
That's
images.
That's what Roman Reigns needs to get over. Overalls.
It's like the image of Rock Hogan from WrestleMania 18. They're both just in overalls. I don't know why that visual is just infinitely more hilarious now, and cooler because again, it makes you cooler.
Obviously, somehow. So Kirishima's like, okay, you know, I want to be a hero. Is my dream. I don't have a flashy quirk. They're right about that. So I've just got to close the distance. I've just got to work even harder. I'll follow the path that I believe in. As long as a man's got a shovel for his heart, his quirk's got nothing to do with it. And we get a montage of him working out, push-ups, running, hitting himself in the head to train his hardening quirk. Then, cut back to the present within the flashback, and his friends are like, so, hey, we're getting ready for high school, should we, go for it? We're too plain, we would never make it. Hey, Kirishima, what are you gonna do? And he's like, I haven't decided yet. He's got the frickin' form filled out in his pocket already with UA as his top choice of high school.
Who puts a piece of paper in their pocket like that? Ever.
With it sticking out over the brim?
Like, with just taking a piece of paper and clearly putting it in your pocket just like this, and just be like, well, Harry, I'll just stuff it in straight down. I just gotta get it. There we go. No one can know. It's like, why wouldn't you fold it up? I'm just saying, My Hero Academia is fake manga, and I'm not going to be appreciated anymore.
Hey, Kirishima may be a sweet, sweet, soft boy, but he's not a smart
No, he's hard!
So he was just like, and now I finished filling out my form. Time to put it in my pocket. Done!
He makes a bunch of rapid folding motions, and then it turns out he hasn't folded at all.
He's mastered the ability to harden himself to maximum hardness, but he hasn't figured out pockets yet. Those
Can't
are still eluding
move
him.
Move fingers too hard. So he goes off by himself, happens to catch sight of a large cloaked figure. I'm talking this thing is probably 20 feet tall. Leering down at a pair of girls, and he's like, hey, where's the Springer Hero Agency?
I knew it didn't say that, but when I just read it this time, he's like, the Sphincter Hero Agency, where is it? And I was like, huh?
No wonder they're terrified of him. So the girls that he's asking are terrified, completely speechless as a result. And so the guy's like, oh, you're not telling me. And he reaches into the building above them, just starts dragging his fingers down the wall, leaving cracks and scrapes. And Kirishima, meanwhile, is like, oh, they're in trouble. I've got to do something. I'm just frozen here. I'm not moving. Come on. And so he's like, oh, I've got to do it. I've got to help them. And before he can do anything, once again, Ashido shows up, just puts herself between the girls and between the giant guy, and is like, you just go down around the corner, you gotta go that way, left of the avenue, the agency's 2 kilometers down that way. And the guy's like, thank you all for my master, and stumbles off. And, Ashido collapses after that because she was freaked out. Obviously, if the guy had tried to do anything, then she would have been done for as well. But she was, she did what she did, what she had to. She basically did Deku in the first chapter, where she just immediately sprang into action in order to help people that were endangered, despite the fact that she really couldn't physically do anything about it. And Kirishima has witnessed all of this, and he's thinking to himself, as much as I have, drilled this into myself, I've just got to be, strong and just be a man and work hard at this. I could be a hero, but I'm not a man. I'm nothing. And he gets back home and he crosses out UA High on his form. He's like, I'm not set out for this.
Buddy, it's an eraser. There's an eraser on the other side.
He's got an eraser on his freaking...
He hasn't figured out that either. He's like, the only way to remove what I've written as a mistake is to just scribble over it. Now to put it in the trash.
He just places it flat on the trash. This isn't working!
Time to put it in the trash can. It's done now!
It's gone forever!
Oh, it's fallen off!
I'm a failure of a man!
I can't even throw paper away. I don't get why Ishido was so kind of like emotional afterwards. Like when she just ran up and started talking to the student, they just start breakdancing. Like I feel like that's the way she should have handled this situation too.
His breakdance level, it's so much higher than the other guys. You have to be like a level 16 breakdancer, and she's at like level 12.
So like if she did it and like made a breakdance, he would just serve her. And that would start off like a chain of events. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would make her heart break if he had schooled her that badly.
Yeah.
Or even worse, she would have been like, hey, come on, don't terrify these girls. Let's all breakdance together. He would be like, no, you're not on my level.
Holy shit. We just created a new manga series off of this. The rest of the story is Ashido's journey to face this guy again. To face this dude again in breakdancing.
The giant man turns his hat sideways, record scratches sound in the background while he strikes a pose.
He actually voiced it, he's like, wiki wiki, and then just starts stomping off.
Yeah. All of a sudden he's got a boombox in his arm holding it on his shoulder.
She's like, I can't, oh no!
Oh, he's mastered the seventh level, the boombox conjuration!
Somebody call the pro heroes, we can't handle this!
Anyway, I like this chapter.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, an awesome chapter. We're getting so much from Kirishima recently. I've been floored by this. This is like, what, like the third instance of him having a really huge moment in this year?
Yeah, he's the type of character where, I don't know, even maybe two or three volumes ago, I was like, yeah, he's cool, whatever. But we've been getting so much lately. He's such a good boy. he's a soft boy. His quirk is hardening. No. He's so soft. I love him so much.
It is a good point that, you know, a guy whose power is to be, you know, as hard as possible when we're finding out he has, like, the softest emotional core of maybe anybody. I think Deku might have a bit more of an edge than this guy does.
But Deku looks at him like, pathetic.
And Deku's like, dude, bro, pick yourself together. It's good lord. You have an eraser. I don't know why. You can still use that spot on the paper.
I feel like if Ida were really lethargic about everything, or If Uraraka never allowed herself to imagine anything, she would just stay grounded in reality the whole time. Or if Bakugo just spent all this time like sniffing flowers, writing poetry, making peace between people.
I'm curious though, because it's kind of cool. There was sort of that notion that was brought up originally that there was going to be like a main group with like Ida and Bakugo and Uraraka, and then we got a lot from Todoroki. And even in, like, the small arcs in between, we've gotten glimpses of a lot of other characters. It's a bit...
Yorozu.
Asui. Yeah, Yorozu. So it's kind of interesting seeing Kirishima move into that level. He was kind of moving into it a bit by being, like, the only person in the class that Bakugo didn't just outright hate. But now he's really like lifting himself into an even higher level, and it's pretty cool. I'm really digging it.
That's because Bakugo was the only one Kirishima could get hard around. Oh!
Oh!
I've seen Yaoi. Anyway, so. But yeah, good chapter. I liked it.
Oh man, I should have been that one dude from the fucking GIF. You know, the one where it's like the kid who's just moving back there. And yeah, I just come in with a.
I really like this chapter. My theory is a pretty easy one though. This big guy is gonna come back and be like, hey. That's not where it is. You lied to me. And Ashido's gonna be like, crap!
You lied to me!
and then Kirishima's gonna be a manly man.
Well,
it's, man up!
It's interesting. People in the chat have been pointing out that the guy that Ashido spoke to and pointed in a direction, I guess was, someone at least looked like him, was teased in the image back when Stain was captured. And they showed this, like the members of the League of Villains. They showed a guy who had very spiky hair, the same kind of teeth, and that same kind of spiky back, like turtle shell kind of thing. You can't see it here because he's like a cloak on.
He's got the...
But,
that's a good point.
If you look at the two images, yeah, it seems like maybe this is somebody who's going to come back in some relevance later on.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool.
I highly doubt that they would have him say stuff like, you know, I'm doing this all for my master if this was going to be literally the only time he showed up ever, so. But, anywho. Yeah.
Nick, I have a segue for you.
Okay.
So, did you ever get the feeling that that dude was going to try to eat those young girls?
I mean, maybe.
Because that seems like a really villainous thing to do, to, like, eat someone, to take their powers, yeah.
In order to take their powers?
Yeah. Also ninjas.
Yeah.
Don't eat your friends.
Don't eat your friends, but be a ninja.
Eat ninjas. Ninjas aren't your friends.
Well, no, in this one, they are your friends. No, because this kid has to be friends with Boruto, who's a ninja. We're trying to work this awesome segue in.
I know, I'm trying to derail it.
No! I need this!
All right, carry on.
I'm minoring in school in segueology.
Are we supposed to talk about Fairy Tail first anyway?
I thought we talked about Boruto first. Oh, no, it does say Fairy Tail. All right, so, similar to how...
First, if you wanted that segue to work out, you went through a lot of trouble, and I'd hate to ruin it for you.
I did do a lot of work. Yeah, I guess let's just do Boruto first.
Doesn't matter too much.
Do it.
All right, let's talk about Boruto. I thought you were talking about Big Mom at first.
Oh, like, I'm segueing to the end, Nick. I got things to do.
I'm so confused. Boruto, chapter number 14, teamwork. It turns out that this boss guy has green hair. That seems so wrong to me.
I think it looks like you could pluck it and eat it. It's like lettuce hair.
Green mutton chops.
See, it's like a little garden on his head.
I liked it because he also has like baby blue eyes or like very bright blue eyes. He's got like kind of this very neon like 80s aesthetic to him. Like he's
a really cool guy. Once you get to know me.
Do you think he dyes his hair? Or is it like ninja natural colors?
Maybe he ate like a bunch of plant people.
And gained their photosynthesis or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like it. Made
I'm cool with that.
It's a side effect of his weird ass jutsu. So, Boruto has shown up in order to save, Tento from Shojoji. Carl. This entire chapter is basically their fight. Boruto takes on his goons first and kicks their asses pretty easily using shadow clones. After they're defeated, that basically means that Shujoji has, you know, gotten a chance to observe them, and he's like, all right, well, I'm going to take you on now. And Tento's like, look out, Boruto! If he gets close to you, he'll eat you! And Boruto's like, eat me. Shujoji's already behind him now.
He's coming at him with a bottle of ranch. He's like, what?
No honey mustard?
No, this is a dude who doesn't have a taste for, like, a finer condiments. He's disgusting. Okay. He just wants to, he just slobbers ranch all over them. Or, in another Adult Swim reference, honey maple ranchonero. That was what Grizzlebees used for their dipping sauce stick. It's a C-Lab reference.
That's nice.
This was a spicy C-Lab reference.
Okay. Anyway, so Shujoji and Boruto fight. It's actually a pretty intense battle that they have. They go through a lot of different little stages, I guess, in their fight throughout the chapter. It starts off with them, you know, just kind of like dashing around, Boruto trying to avoid getting grabbed by him because he wants to beat him. And, you know, he gets caught. He has to headbutt him to get away from him and stuff. He tries to use his shadow clones, but in order to help him fight. There's also a brief little bit where he uses an Uchiha Shuriken technique. Because, he's, you know, learned from Sasuke. That makes sense. But it turns out that Shujoji, in addition to his I-eat-people jutsu, he has this special technique, Futon Zephyr Shield, which is basically just like, I repel everything. Everything goes away from me and goes back to you. So, rubber your glue. He does that for everything through the chapter. He says that, like, anything that he can see, he can repel. I was certain that this would just be like, oh, well, Boruto will use his Vanishing Rasengan then. No.
Next page. I can't use my Vanishing Rasengan.
Doesn't do it, yeah. So, I guess because Boruto quickly analyzes, well, he'll just read his trajectory then. He's like, you could have at least tried it. he might have had a little bit, he might have been taken by surprise and had a little bit of trouble with it. You don't know.
Like, he can't waste his chakra like that. He's about to be conservative.
Yeah.
I mean, he did make one shadow clone over there who's just dressed up like a cheerleader rooting them on, but that's actually very relevant. You go!
You need that. I mean, how else are you gonna defeat him?
That moral support is essential.
Yeah. And the style points are gonna be very high.
Mm-hmm. He's doing a 6-person pyramid with one person.
Boruto summons a bunch of shadow clones. He throws down a smoke bomb so that he can try and attack the guy through it. But gradually, Shujoji just, you know, attacks his shadow clones, knocks them out. He catches Boruto by the throat and then deals with the last shadow clone. So he's like, ah, I gotcha now. And, he says rather grossly, you know, I think I'll snap your neck and paralyze you, then enjoy you at my leisure. Gotta be careful not to accidentally kill you outright.
A lovely guy.
I mean, wouldn't if you snapped his neck, he would be just dead outright?
You can break someone's neck without killing them immediately.
It's a special ninja move. Ninja neck snap.
I guess it... Ninja techniques would suffice, yeah.
Yes. I'm a ninja, can't you tell?
Yeah, I'm one of them ninjas that breaks necks and then they don't die.
Not right away, at least. Anyway, gonna break your neck, eat your brain like a ninja does, and then, yeah.
My ninja clan's known for two things. For breaking necks without killing you, and we don't make no tips at restaurants. You get your own money!
But he's got Boruto completely helpless when suddenly a shuriken strikes him in the back. And he's like, but I know I got rid of all the shadow doppelgangers. There was a fifth one. He looks over and, Tenjo's the one who threw the shuriken because that's what the whole thing, because he practiced shuriken throwing. Remember? That was the thing. He practiced throwing shuriken. So he got to throw a shuriken and it was useful because that was being set up for a long time. It feels like forever because these are monthly chapters.
Dick, this was a much longer payoff than that. This is the first time in Naruto someone getting hit with a shuriken was actually important. Like, this was the turnabout.
No, not the first time. The first time would have been when, Iruka blocked the giant-ass shuriken that Mizuki threw in the first chapter in order to save Naruto.
Yeah, this is
he blocked it with his own back.
This is the first time in a very long time that it's been relevant that someone hit with a shuriken.
And I think it's the first time that it was important when it hit the person it was intended to.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that makes a pretty big difference there.
So, Shujoji is like, I'll show you what's what, and he turns on Tenzo, starts to go after him, and Boruto's like, I'm instantly better for being strangled! And hits him in the back with the Rasengan, and that's enough to leave him down for the count. Boruto and Tenzo are victorious, and he's like, couldn't take that, could you? That was our teamwork. And Shujoji's like, that's an intangible concept. It's not something that you can actually see or feel.
Oh, the wing.
That's the end of the chapter. I mean, it's a decent action chapter, I think.
I think it's kind of interesting. I almost started to kind of, like, I realize he's just like a really gross, fat, like, dude who wants to eat people, but I did kind of start to find myself a little, enamored by Sojoji, I think is his name, or something similar.
Yeah.
I started to kind of like him as a villain as things went along, just from like how arrogant and kind of shitty he was on everything.
He's so disgusting looking.
It's a very different type of villain for Naruto.
Yeah. He looks like a weird beast that has magically become a man. His canines are kind of pronounced. So like, if you're reading the Jump version, it's page 90. He has this kind of like snarl, and you can see his like fangs and just the way he's holding his hands. It's like, oh, look, he's like an animal.
There's not going to be any Tumblr accounts made to talk about how they think this guy is secretly misunderstood and super lovable. There's not going to be anything like Deidre or whatever where they're just like, no, he's so beautiful and cute and Sasuke ruined him. And everyone's going to be like, hey, it's kind of gross.
Like, man, I'm going to pass on this one.
Yeah. Let this one slide. So I liked it. It's a tough format to still kind of get used to, like, because I'm used to Naruto in a weekly format, so monthly ones where you get the entire fight all at once. It's different because you, like, I almost, like, in the middle of this fight, I was kind of, like, almost expecting breaks to happen. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is, like, three or four times as long as a normal chapter. They're not going to, like, break for anything.
Yeah, I thought it was I don't really care that much for Boruto. Like, I read it, but, you know, it's just, like, another thing to read. But I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I really didn't see Tento coming in at the end. And it totally makes sense that he did. But I was like, oh yeah, of course, he's gonna have a fifth shadow, you know, clone. Of course he is. Oh, he doesn't. Oh, that's nice. Oh, okay. Really,
I personally thought that it was kinda obvious that it was going to happen.
La-dee-da!
Nick's like, well, if you're not a plebeian, then I suppose it could have been, if you're some kind of manga peasant, I suppose, well, it might have been a surprise. Yeah.
You would understand. You would understand a little something called foreshadowing.
Hashtag Nick.
I don't know, like, especially when they made a big deal out of him counting down the shadow clones, I was like, okay, he's gonna get down to zero and someone's going to, and he's going to be like, what, another attack? And then, but that's not, I don't really have a problem with it in that respect. Cause, you know, even if you see that coming, it's nice that it all comes full circle. It is, you know, honestly, considering that usually in Naruto, there's just like, okay, this person is stronger and this person is weaker. The stronger one's almost always going to be the difference maker over the weak one. It's, Naruto usually wouldn't have this kind of moment where someone who was having to be protected through the whole thing all of a sudden managed to make a little difference. Instead, they would if they were under a similar circumstance, then they would just get a new technique or a big power up or something like that. They wouldn't just put their thumb on the scale and in order to tip it. So that was a nice touch. I really don't like Boruto's one-liner. It's pretty terrible. You're gonna need some work on those, buddy.
Yeah, I almost expected Tento. Yeah,
what fucking teamwork? You got yourself fucking caught and you saved your dumbass.
I almost expected Tento to just like slowly just be like, oh, I'm not with him. I don't know him. Like, why are you saying that? You're the only person, you and him are the only people who are conscious right now.
Just wants the world in general to know.
All right, we want to move on then.
Okay.
Let's talk.
Yes.
Fairy Tale, Nick and Annalise.
Yeah.
Fairy Tale.
So Sojoji, see, he eats ninjas, but Agnolaji eats magic. All types of magic, Chris.
All types of magic.
You can't hurt him with magic.
All magic?
You can't hurt him with magic.
As we're going to find out in this chapter.
Even if you make some sort of rainbow of magic, you wouldn't be able to hurt him.
Yeah, that would be certainly the logic to follow. Absolutely. I mean, if magic encountering him is just absorbed because he absorbs all magic, then surely if you, even if you times magic by 7 and have it against 0, it's still gonna eventually just, you know what, let's get into this chapter. We're gonna see how this logic all plays out.
What if it like Captain Planets into something else, you know? With all the magics combined, I am Captain Magic.
Well, Magic Planet. But I don't think, Duke Nukem or, all the other various different villains of the Captain Planet universe had the ability to just absorb environmental protection. Like, that wasn't their ability. Like the Warthog guy, Baron, like, Mud Pile or whatever their fucking names were. They weren't just like, I absorb all healthy environmental actions.
I see you didn't get it to the secret fifth season, eh?
I did not. You know what? I got really bummed out that the only guy representing America was a redhead, which I was like, well, that's not representative at all. Fuck this nonsense. Call me when there's a series that represents the dark-haired white male in America again. That's what I'm looking for. Fairy Tale Chapter 543, Hearts Connected. And we are getting real close to the end because the cover page here is for the Avatar arc, which upon looking at it, I was like, I don't remember anything that happened in that arc. I remember that dude on the far right did the weird goat thing, and the girl below him did like the, I make you sick and cramp up thing. And that's it. I have no idea who that dude in the background is. I assume some kind of fly man. Anyways, so, I should pull out the graph, because I understand it's a very difficult concept. Physical actinologia is body, fighting in the real world. Spirit actinology is fighting in the spirit world. Hopefully you have a pen and paper. You could draw this down yourself and try to go from there. So this all starts in the real world. Is there in, I forget the name of this place. It comes up a couple times a little bit. But they lost the boat. The actinology. Farshad. They lost the boat. Actinology showed up and he blasted them all away. And we made a joke about it last week where it was like, oh, I guess Gray's got to like use ice magic to make a boat. And we were like, does that count as a boat? Like, what has to qualify for this weird, sea or, travel sickness rule to come into effect? Could it even be a boat? Would it even be buoyant? Or would it just sink because it's...
Would he make sails?
Yeah, like, it Gray just to me is like, I'll make a boat! And then, for some reason, Juvia's like, I'll assist you as well. And I was like, doing what? You don't make ice. What can you do?
Even she puts on her cheerleading outfit and yay!
she's distracting.
That seems far more in character for Juvia than for Boros.
And everyone's like, all right, well, we need to like focus on and like gather. We need to start spirit bombing this shit, guys. Because Lucy's on her way, and there's a panel of Lucy and 98% her tits in the shot coming straight at the screen.
Happy, make sure you carry me so that my boobs get there before the rest of us.
Look at Happy's face in that panel. He kind of looks a little worried. Like, is this right?
He's like,
am I showing enough tit?
They're so heavy. Shut up, Happy. Just do it. Oh, my arms. But as Lucy is flying over here, she's recognizing that this is Harjun. This is where her adventure started. This is where she first met Natsu all back in the first chapter of this series, way back
in
the day.
I remember it like it was yesterday. She just starts flashing back and crashes into something.
Happy's like, oh, look, tall roof, sorry. She's like, her face is like just covered in shingles. And she's like, it was the happiest day of my life.
Oh, thank God my boobs cushioned the impact.
And she's saying, I must meet Natsu here once again, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to meet him here one more time. We cut over to Natsu and his friends who have been thoroughly trounced by Actinologia because he's like, this is where it ends. This is what it means to be a dragon slayer. This is my life's purpose. I will not let even one dragon be alive. And Natsu just starts laughing at him. And he's like, you know, isn't it funny? Because, like, you're a dragon too. So if your goal is to kill all dragons, you can never do it because there's always going to be one left. And for some reason, Actinologia has, like...
I got you with my flawless logic. Kill yourself.
For a moment, it almost looks like Actinologia is stunned by this. He's just like...
He's like, wait a second. Shit!
Oh, fuck! Fuck! My plan! But that too continues. He says, besides, we're the humans here. Yeah, we may get our powers from dragons, but we're still humans. And the true dragons are super noble and awesome and nice. And then, I can't remember if this is something we found out about Acknowledgia before, or if this is just like a last minute kind of justification for things, but Acknowledgia's like, mad dragons! They murdered my family! They murdered my friends! They killed my town and killed little girls and they're awful! And then...
You said specifically, they ate my family.
Yeah.
So that's our third eating people thing.
It's all coming in here.
Reference this week.
And then, that's where Natsu's like, stupid, didn't you listen? I said true dragons. There are all kinds of dragons out there, just like there are all kinds of humans. And the ones that you hate, the ones that you love, the strong, the weak, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, dragons are all very different, and I have this entire piece on diversity and dragon stereotyping I'd like you to read.
I got an A in my diversity class for this.
I don't know. If he's saying that there are true dragons and there are not true dragons, that actually sounds super racist to me. That's like, you know, imagine like if you just went to someone and you're like, you're not a real human. Like,
You mean like the fact that two members of this seven-man team are fake dragon slayers?
Yeah. Maybe you should shut your goddamn mouth, Natsu.
You know, he got an A on that diversity paper, but he's failing the class because...
His arguments were great in it, but his format was awful. He just doesn't get how to actually format and structure an essay. He's really bad. He keeps shoving papers into his pocket straight down and it's all a mess. But Natsu is suddenly full of power. He's having flames just jettison off his body. And Acknowledge's like, what happened to my attacks? Why are you? And Wendy shouts out, she's like, everyone, I'm using my nebulous statistic-raising power on your bodies and giving your magic to Natsu. And everyone's just like, yeah, Natsu, you go do it. I've given you everything. Don't worry. I know there are seven of us, but somehow it still ends with you being the only one who's relevant in this fight. And Natsu's
power
like...
Power of electricity, power of steel, power of the other ones.
Cobra's like, I'm so glad that I was present for this.
My character arc finally comes to a conclusion. And Natsu's like, I'm going to gain all your power and turn into flame. This is the power of seven fire dragons.
No, he's using super rare Charizard's ability to turn any form of energy into a fire energy.
So this should be where Acknowledgia is just like, I nullify and devour all magic. I don't care.
You turn it all into fire magic, the type that I've been countering this entire time.
The next panel with him is just going to be a...
It's not.
The end.
Oh god, I wish it was, but it's annoying me that this is gonna be the fucking turnabout in this stupid shit. And yes, Gray did make a boat out of ice, including ice sails.
So this boat?
His rival / childhood friend helped him. I forget his name.
Leon, I believe.
Leon?
So this boat, like, I get that it's out of, like, there's like fog or smoke or steam or whatever. But I didn't realize that, like, half of the boat is obscured by the steam, and I thought it was just, like, this really weirdly shaped boat that looked like it was falling backwards.
Like, it's melting already. They're like, yeah. Why did Acknowledgia have to attack on the hottest day of summer?
Just, like, balanced like, up this so tiny weird. Rock in the middle of
And also, I like how Lion mentions, this is the best thing we've ever made. And I'm like... No, it's not. You guys have made such complicated bullshit since the start of this series. This one, you made a big boat that can't sail. But apparently is enough boat to qualify because Urza's like, now's my time. Like, we're going to get him in there. So they're channeling their magic. They're like, oh, spirit bomb. And Urza leaps into the air. She's like, take this. This is every magical weapon I possess and hurls it at Acknowledgia, who does not just devour them like the magical weapons they are. He's like, oh, my one weakness despite actually being what I'm immune to. Even if they weren't something he could just devour, she just throws a bunch of swords at him straight on. And for some reason, he's just like, oh, this is slowly pushing me forward.
Maybe I'm a secret masochist. Wait, no, I'm not. Nope.
This is reminding me of like those old school Thanos comics where he was like, his gimmick was that he made himself be defeated because he couldn't be defeated otherwise. So he'd have like the cosmic cube in his hand and then he'd just be like, oops, I dropped the cosmic cube by one source of power. I hope nobody grabs it. Like that's like Akhalaj is just like, oh no, I'm slowly going towards the boat.
It's actually a really weird moment. I'll wait till you get to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Akhalaja is slammed into the boat. I guess the boat is the strongest ice there is because it doesn't just shatter underneath him. But that makes sense. Gray's a god ice slayer thing. Or not demon ice slayer, sorry. So he shed pretty strong ice. And that's when they're like, everyone, release your power! And they throw it out there. And there's this small scene in here. This is actually the only scene I like in this entire chapter, where we see everyone doing their spirit bomb sending, and you see Sharia there, and she's looking on, and she's sad, because if you recall, she gave up all of her magical power in that fight against Di Maria. So she has none, but I think it's Carla who actually goes up and kind of like pushes her on the back and just says like, mm-hmm. Hey, just join in with us. Doesn't matter.
It's really sweet.
Yeah, it's a sweet scene, and it.
and they're like, "Wait a minute, it's not working."
Is somebody in the circle of
have magic is ruining it for everyone?
Who would be the douchiest guy to call it out? Like it's just, it's like Bacchus for some reason. There's like, hey, hold on, one of these fuckers here doesn't have magic. Who is it? Get out! You're breaking up the chair. All right, everyone, hands up. Go!
You're ruining it for everyone.
Get out of here!
Clearly, I need to get to have sex with you against your will in order to rectify this.
God, fucking idiots! All right, everyone, hands back to you. Just leave! Put her on the boat! I'm not gonna start.
Look at us.
I'm not gonna do it until she's
don't
on the boat.
Don't look back! Don't look back at us! No, don't you look at me! Get in the car!
Just get in the car. Missed! She just like teleports her into a volcano. Like, finally, all right. Hands together. Our friendship will be unbreakable. There we go.
Kumbaya, and we're safe.
With this, all this collective magic power, of course, with an upskirt shot, Lucy casts Fairy Sphere.
Okay. So the sound effect is flash, and the first time I read this, I was like, oh, it's because she's flashing her panties, right? Oh, no, Fairy Sphere! Here, get it. I got it. Okay. Like, I seriously thought they were just, like, drawing attention to, look at those panties. Mm.
It's so weird, because it's not, like, overt enough to be titillating, but it's the fact that it was drawn regardless just detracts from any seriousness it could have, so it just feels so pointless and mean-spirited to be like...
And the fact that it's right after the sweet scene of, like, okay, no, you join in too. Anyway, panties!
Yeah, don't forget, Lucy. You're always in short skirts for whatever reason.
She specifically changed her outfit also for this ritual to one where her top is just a bra. So.
You gotta let the magic course through you, and if you have too much.
If you have too much clothing on, you can't hear the magical vibration.
You can't hear the roller skates anymore. I can't hear with all these clothes on! So that's how this chapter ends, with Lucy sending forth this magical power to Natsu, who says, I got what you sent! And,
the virus.
Yeah.
Don't click on whatever email you get.
He has gonorrhea. Sorry, you shouldn't have let Elfman be in that circle.
It cuts back to the circle, and Elfman's just like, oh.
Elfman's just like,
back is just like, get out!
He's like trying to be nonchalant. He's like, so who sent the gonorrhea with their magic, huh? Come on, guys. Fess up. That's what a man would do. Anyway, I gotta get going right now, though, for unrelated reasons.
Hey, he's taking everything we've got, right? I've got a cold. Oh, I feel so much better now.
He's like, take my college debts! And that dude's like, hey! Who's sending their junk mail to me in college debts? Your holiday waits. Come on.
That's how they're going to take out Akhalaja. It's not his firepower. It's all the shit people are sending.
It's just essentially the conclusion to the Digimon movie. They just sent, they just send him so many messages that Actalogia's like programming gets locked out. He's like, my processes are loaded up with smaltzy messages from strangers.
I mean, hey, man, that was why the Shining Finger and Burning Finger were such powerful attacks. It was because Domon would channel all and give to his foe his love, his anger, and all of his depression. And then it would defeat them because they were overwhelmed by it. And there you go.
I think this is... guys, like we said, they'd have to build a boat out of ice next week. This is what's going to happen. Next week, you're going to come in and act like it's just like, oh, I'm so sad. Is there, like, one really sad person in your group?
Why do I have gonorrhea now?
It just cuts back to Elfman again, just nervously looking about.
No, and with that, somebody goes like, high five, man. Good job. You did it.
He's like, oh, I took all the power for your friends. Wait a minute. There's something weird in here. And that's when the hippopotamus from Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, shows up. He's like, did you get that thing I sent you? And that's another Adult Swim reference I just cleverly wove into the tangent.
Wove into the
narrative. Yeah, that's an awful chapter, fairy tale. If only in the sense that I'm like, if this is what they're going with, if this is the conclusion that Natsu just gets this, all this extra power from everyone else, and that's what beats Actalogia, it's just like, you just had no idea, right? Because this doesn't make sense if you just follow the chain. He was unable to be trapped in the space between space and time because he just ate all of the magic in there.
Because, like, there's no friendship in there. Come on.
But if friendship is literally a magic, he should be able to eat it.
Agnolich is like, oh man, I'm overwhelmed by all this power, and I have this overwhelming urge to eat baby kidneys. It cuts back to the circle and Froge is smiling.
First, episode two. Well, I guess you know what Froge thinks this time.
Anyway.
Do you bet this one ends with Natsu just punching Nakmalaja with a really big fiery punch? With even more savage emotions to it.
It literally just like the same two panels from when he punches Xerath. Like, not even like replacing it with Akinologia's human form. Just it's Xerath again that Natsu's punching.
No, I want to see like a little white at mark and then like kind of like shittily drawn.
half erased is outline of Xerath.
It's Kirishima's erasure.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like when Kirishima came in and he's just like, all right, let's just. There we go, and then I'll just, I'm just gonna put a stamp over top of this. There you go.
Really clumsily wide-outed Xerath, and then just a label on top of it from when he put a post-it note on top of Xerath's face that says, "Draw Akinologia here later."
What's the line from the Hitman games where they clearly forgot to put a description in somewhere, so there was an item you could look at that says Alan put details here. Like, that's the thing that's on there. It's like, note to hero, future hero from current hero. Make sure to draw Actalogia.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's move on to Food Wars. Shokugeki no Soma. It's chapter 222, What We Want to Protect. This is continuing the flashback that began at the end of the last chapter, where we're learning how Megishima came to join the Rebel Alliance against Central. And so basically what happens is that Megumi and Soma are just like, yeah, so he hung up on me, so we're going to go see if we can go and try to convince him. And while they're on their way, Erina... You know, they basically just like mentioned where they're going to Erina, and she says, you know, he'd be nice to have as an ally, but I don't know, it's going to be really difficult because he is known as the Shokugeki hating chef. So, Soma and Megumi go off to find Megishima, they find this crowd outside of his place, And these two tough-looking guys are like, "Hey, you're from Totsuki. You guys dare not be enemy spies." Go, blah, blah, blah. And one of them happens to just have a newspaper on hand. It's like, the Azami administration and its central whatever. And so it's a really weird, like, full page article tabloid thing. So it's like, you know, partnership with all Hokkaido restaurants finalized. Bold decision or coercion. And Azami is there. He's like, shaking hands with someone who's like, "Oh, I don't want to do this."
The only thing I wish I would make the scene better is if in Azami's other hand, for some reason, he was just holding a single red balloon. Like he, like he thought this was a party. Like he thinks this is a celebration. He's like, that's how he's like, this is how humans celebrate things that they enjoy.
He's got like a party hat like strapped onto his elbow because he thinks that that's how they're worn.
Or it's just like a comically tiny one, like it was meant for children. He was just too cheap to buy an adult one.
Oh man. So there is an explanation that one of these guys gives them, which is like, "Oh yes, the central group. They've started forcing it down the throats of all the restaurants in Hokkaido. The whole business partnership with the institute may sound great, but it's just the excuse for central to order everyone around and tell them how and what they're supposed to cook. If you don't listen, they put the squeeze on your distributors to cut off your supply so you can't operate anymore. Dozens of restaurants are on the brink of collapse thanks to them." Which is why they have all come to see Megashima, or as they refer to him, the young master. And, they step inside and Megashima's in there. He's wearing this robe and he's like, "I will keep everyone's ramen safe."
So, Ollie, is Megashima in Icky Man?
I would say he is. Yeah, he's in Icky Man.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know what, I've got a full perception, like a great perspective now on what Icky Man are. Do they evolve at any point? Like, do they reach new levels of Icky Man?
Champion level Icky Man?
Yeah. Exactly, like they Icky-volve, I guess,
into Sugemon or yeah. Something like that.
You gotta get them in an Icky-ball first, and then it goes from there. Yeah, I got it.
And while they're in training, they're Kawaii-mon.
Oh my god, I love it. Yes.
I don't get your joke because okay. I don't understand Japanese.
Kawaii just means cute.
Does it? I thought it meant cool.
Kawaii?
I thought it meant cool beans.
No, cool is...
Oh, wait, is that sugoi? Sugoi?
Sugoi means, like, amazing or incredible. For, I guess, a proclamation of, like, cool, I guess you could say, like, sugoi or suge.
How would I say cool beans in Japanese?
Cool beans!
Cool beans! Ashihara-san! He's just like, "Get out of my house." My back hurts, get out of here! Just like, "I just wanted you to know."
Oh god.
Also, I mutated teleportation powers just to say this. He's like, "You've wasted so much."
What a waste of your gift. So, we get this little bit of narration over an image of Megashima pulling a ramen cart. It says, "Tosuke Megashima devoted himself to perfecting his ramen skills. Pulling his own ramen cart, the length and breadth of Japan to practice his..." Do you think he was actually, like, cooking ramen, or he was just pulling the cart around?
Well, see, he has to go through several stages. So, first, it's just pulling, and then it's cooking, and then it's... Pulling and cooking? Cooking while he's pulling.
What they don't show you is actually...
He just, like, gets it to, like, psychically, like, roll around while he's cooking on top of it or something.
What they're not showing you is that in the back, Davis and, Beamon are in the back helping him.
Getting ready to go to get their Time magazine cover for their awesome run. What a fucking stupid Digimon Oshima hat. Anyway, but there's more. Apparently he's fucking just treated as, like, the boss of the ramen underworld. It's so weird. People are coming to him like he's a freaking Yakuza boss. And he's like, he would settle disputes between ramen restaurants, help those shops that were teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, and more. His name quickly resonated across the whole country, and before he knew it, he gained the absolute trust of all ramen chefs in the nation, and called by such titles as the Young Master and Boss Megishima, he became the unofficial king of Japan's ramen. so stupid.
I like how they call out, like, wait, he's looking like that, but is he really just a high school student?
And so it was like, Boss Megishima, what the hell is all this? Even he, like, you would think that Soma of all people would be like, this is awesome. He's like, fuck.
Soma's like, this is dumb. I hate this.
This is really stupid. I don't really want to be a chef anymore after all this.
He's like, I just throw it in the towel.
He's like, you know what? Fuck this school. Fuck all you guys. Good luck.
Good luck composing a central without me, bitches. So, one of the younger ramen Yakuza is like, oh, we're so grateful to you, Boss Megishima. Oh, and, you know, he was up just passing by when our old head chef, my dad, classroom illness, he stuck around and helped us keep going. And it's thanks to him that we could keep the shop running until my dad recovered. And Megishima's like, now it's your turn to be there for your dad. I promise I'll do what I can to help. Oh. And he gets, like, freaking sparkling back or behind him. All of a sudden, ooh.
Oh, Boss Megishima, young master!
Like, he gets the freaking Super Bishonen treatment, despite the fact that he's, you know, this giant, weird-looking dude.
Yeah, he's this big, like, tough guy and, like, shoujo bubble.
And we're like, oh! And then Soma and Megumi are looking on through all this, and they're like, man, he's so much cooler than the frickin' Meatball Association. He gets shit on so much, that poor guy. Megishima is not very happy to see Soma. And he's like, I told you, no, I'm not gonna help you, go away. And Megumi's like, don't you wanna get your seat back up in council? Who cares? It doesn't give a shit.
He's like, I was on a council?
Almost. I mean, someone says, hey, well, this isn't, if you were not into this whole competitive scene at Totsuki, then why'd you join the academy? And he's like, oh, I heard it was the best cooking school in Japan. Fair enough.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't realize they decided that every action of the school must be predicated on cooking battles with fellow classmates.
And you didn't know that either, Soma, so shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but he was enrolled by his dad.
He was not enrolled by his own will, that's true. So, the way that Megashima explains it is, anyway, some people just wouldn't give it a rest, so I took up every challenge just to shut them up. Before I knew it, they stuck me with the third seat. And there's like a flashback image of him being crowned the third seat, and he's just like, "The fuck's going on?"
Like, did he have that same reaction every time he rose a seat, or did they just bring him right to the third seat? Just like, do what now?
It's entirely possible. He implied to be super strong. So.
I just like the notion that he just kept rising into ranks at every time. Like, congratulations on the 60. It's just the same shot. I'm like, what? What happens now?
How many seats do I have? What?
Yeah, do I get more chairs? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I only have. I need only one chair for my desk.
Third seat.
It's not going to be like that chair from Casino Royale, is it? I don't want that chair. I saw what they did to poor Daniel Craig and his nuts. You know what I'm talking about, Nick. Don't you try to ignore it.
I do know what you're talking about. Megishima says, I don't want my ramen to be used as a tool of war. That's a real sentence that was written by someone who thought about writing it.
It's a glorious line that in a series that took itself a little more seriously, you would just be laughing at. But in Food Wars, you're like, no. I'm like, yeah, he probably does that.
About right, yeah.
He's definitely like, he's like Albert Einstein after he finishes this. He's like, my God, what have I done? I've created a monster! My ramen has taken so much!
I was reminded, as I looked at the bowl of ramen, I am become death, destroyer of worlds.
And then there's essentially just way later on in life, a Watchmen comet predicated around this ramen death spiral. Like, we used ramen and from it we created someone too powerful for us to control, Dr. Ramen.
Just, like a mushroom cloud appears, but it's actually just a mushroom in the ramen. Oh my god. So... So, Megumi makes a desperate bid, like, hey, you know, we really need your help. Come on. I mean, our friends are so important to us. They're in danger of being expelled. I want to do everything I can to protect them. And Megashiba says, well, hey, I'm trying to protect what's important to me too. And that's current ramen culture. So, sorry. No. I've got my hands full looking after all of this, which is understandable. So Soma's like, all right then. You'll help us win the Team Shokugeki, and once I get the first seat, I'll make sure to do a big favor for the ramen world. How's that? She was just like, what? And also Megumi points out, it's like, wouldn't the first seat go to Megashima anyway? And so it was like, oh, I guess I just have to beat him and take it then. Oh, man. So, Soma's like, alright, fine then. If I can make a better roll of ramen than you can, then that'll prove that I'm not just all talk. Which does get Megashima fired up, because he's like, you beat me at ramen? That's the definition of all talk. He's just, oh, tie my headband on her. Do this, bitch. Soma's clothes do not explode off, over the course of this competition. Instead, it's like he's being beaten the fuck up. In fact, we even see one of the ingredients that Megashima is using hit him square in the ribs.
Oof.
It looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
But Soma refuses to give up. He's like the Thing in that really famous comic book. He's like, no, you can't beat me. And Megashima is eventually like, I could smash your bones and destroy your body back and never break your spirit. Soma just keeps on refusing to stay down. And he says, the more people that are out there doing totally different things than me, the better. I want to protect a culinary world that lets them do that. So come on, senpai. One more bleh, and it just falls over.
It's like, he must have wanted one more contest. And like, Megumi like pulls out his iPod. He's like, actually, he was quoting the Daft Punk song that just came on. He was gonna start. He just, when it comes on, he can't stop singing it, which is weird because it's only got one lyric to it.
So, Megashima says, I didn't say anything about him losing. He was ready to go, but me, I wasn't even gonna step into the ring. It's Yukihira's win, and it wasn't even a fight. And Megumi's like, then that means, yes, I'll make you a promise. In that Team Shokugeki, I'll do everything in my power to win.
I want some ramen now.
I didn't really like this chapter.
Uh-oh. Fight, 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 fight.
I don't know. Of all the stuff that we've seen so far, particularly when it comes to the three members of Central that were, they can have it, like, I understand why you do get an idea of why Megashima did not go along with Central. His ideals don't fit with them, and also he just, you know, cares too much about the people that he's close to, basically. That makes sense. But his motivations for joining the Team Shokugeki are just so much shallower than Kuga's and Ishiki's. Kuga's, you know, we've seen him, his motivations laid out where he's got this grudge against Tsukasa, that he wants to see through the end and he wants to get his revenge against him. Ishiki, we've seen this, how much he cares about his friends in the Polaris Storm and why he wants to help them out. And Megashima is just like, well, I guess you impressed me with your attitude, so I will join with you.
All right, Annalise, I want your rebuttal, and I'm going to give you Nick's spot on the actual overlay, so Nick doesn't get to even be around anymore. See?
No, I don't have a rebuttal. I mean, I think the chapter was fine.
All right, now, call him some mean names. Make fun of his receding hairline, like when you make a point. You're like, well, I think this is a great chapter, and you're balding.
What do you think? It's fading away like your hair?
Oh!
No, that was really bad. No, I mean, I thought the chapter was fine. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't fantastic or anything, but it was, I found it fine. But it really made me hungry for ramen. I'm so hungry for ramen. Yeah, that's all.
I can see certainly where this isn't as entertaining of a chapter. I think part of it is Megashima doesn't feel as fleshed out as I was kind of hoping he was. I feel like this was a character design that was made and then his gimmick was created after the fact.
Yeah, I can see that.
Cause it just doesn't feel like the way we were introduced to him is like this super tall guy who for some reason wears like a winter hat all year round is eventually like, oh yeah, and he's actually like a super old school like Japanese, like mafia boss kind of like mentality to him who like serves his vassals well. Like it's just like sort of a weird mixture of stuff. And for being the third seat, just like his gimmick, like I make great ramen. Like I get ramen's a huge dish in Japan. Like it's a very significant thing to be master of. But like when, what's his name? Tsukasa. Tsukasa's ability is he knows how ingredients are so perfectly he could hear their voice, basically. Like, he has this that perfection with them. And yeah. Window has gone across the world over to find the rarest ingredients. And then it's like, what's your specialty? Next person down the line, he's like, I make ramen. It's like, is there more to it? Like, even Takumi is like, I'm going to take Italian cuisine and give it a Japanese flavor. Like, I'm going to make Italian work for a Japanese population. Like, that's more interesting in a like, grand scheme than just ramen, yo. Boom.
Maybe he, no, I can't think of anything. I was gonna make up some bullshit, but.
Maybe he uses this ramen to power up weapons that he uses to fight wars.
He plays it like a harp. You know, the noodle.
Oh, yeah, and he uses it
he
to, like, charm
sweet,
people.
Sweet music, yeah.
Yeah, like, he finished...
But we did see someone getting the shit beat out of him, so maybe more like he whips them into, you know, submission.
I like the idea that he does the musical instrument, and he's like, now you shall be serenaded by my beautiful song. We'll start with Aerosmith's Love in the Elevator. He's like... I don't know if that's a serenade at any point, but all right.
All right, well then, how about this heartwarming song? She's my cherry pie.
It's a classic from Warrant, everybody.
You can't not love it.
He only knows, like, 80s sexy songs. He's just like, all right, fine.
He's super romantic for some reason.
Because you're...
Yeah, you shook me all night long.
Do-do-do, too hot for teacher.
Just, like, says all the most suggestive lines in this super, super passionate, emotional, loving tone. I got my pencil. Give me something to write on, man. All right, so let's move on to Dr. Stone. Z equals 18, Sorcery Showdown. Last time, Senku was brought by Kohaku to her village, where he immediately started wowing people with soap bubbles. And, proving that he's kind of a dick, sometimes, because he's like, ha ha, look at how primitive they are. I will rule them all. There's, There's a great joke at the beginning because I forget which of the two goons it is, but the blonde one is like, "Oh no, stabbing these jewels just causes more of them to appear. There's no choice. I'll use my secret technique." And he like holds his spear aloft and then runs away. Secret technique. It's someone else's problem. That's great.
One thing I just want to note, I love Replica Rabbit's intro to this, where it's like, all right, we're going to start Dr. Stone. It's time to get stoned. Like, we just need to print t-shirts for that and shit. And just like, you just put like you put a shot of Senku on the front. So that way people are like, I mean, I think I know what it means, but why is there some spiky haired caveman scientist man on the front instead of just a fucking pot leaf?
Why is he dragging his thumb across his tunic to write E=MC² in blood? What does that have to do with pot? So at this point, Chrome, the open-minded one that Kohaku had mentioned before, appears and immediately starts making faces because he's like, "I'm Crow. I've got one bad head on my shoulders. I'm a genius sorcerer."
Wicked, wicked, wicked. Also, I love that he is wearing the same impractically stupid shoes that Kohaku is. Like, that's just a cultural thing, I guess, for them to wear really dumb shoes.
Also, he's got a pointlessly high collar for no reason. Just goes like that.
He can turtle.
So, Senku and Chrome talk to each other, and immediately Chrome is just like, "Hey, you know, I can make these things too. It's just, you just need charcoal eye in order to do it." And Kinro and Ginro are like, "We weren't scared. Only a fool lets his guard down in the face of the unknown." And the other one's like, "I was scared." So Chrome like casts off his cloak and he's like, "I won't be upstaged. Sorcery is my domain." And so we get this big, you know, Senku versus Chrome graphic, which did give me big nostalgia. Because Aisha 21 would do this kind of thing all the time, the individual showdown with their names appearing, right before they faced off. So first, before they do that, Chrome is like, "Hey, well, let's go to a different location first." And they go to his hut, basically. And, he's like, "So just give me a second. Wait right here." And, he races inside and, comes back out. Starts a fire, and he's like, "Behold my bad sorcery! Watch as I manipulate fire!"
His face in that panel is just so good. Like, "Oh, I'm manipulating it! Magic."
And starts throwing powder into the fire. He's like, "Oh, watch, it's yellow, and now it's blue, and green, and purple! Oh!" And three primitive people who are watching are like, "Oh my god, the sorcery!" And Senku's like, he's just using different flame reactions, you know, salt and copper and sulfur. You just toss those in that order, right? Huh, although where did you get the copper? He just kind of like starts talking to himself really casually around it. "Well, maybe you got some blue crystals out of a cave." And so Chrome is, you know, like, But inside he's just like, "How does he know?"
He has what some people are calling the NL face, where he just has that face when he realizes, like, "Oh, shit! It doesn't work on you!"
He's like got this image in his head. It's like, you know, he's thinking about a million things in a second. Like, "How does he know about all this stuff? Maybe he's like a mind reader." And he has this image in his head. Like, "I just thought I would wow him and Senku would like take his clothes off and bow before me." But, you know, he's like, "Well, you know, but my sorcery, yeah, it's real, you know, it's just a small demonstration. Anyway, oh, check this thing out." And he goes and gets a rock, and he rubs his hands around it, and he zaps, Kinjo with it. And he's like, "Oh, what was that? What'd you do?" And Sekka's like, huh, yeah, it's a ball of sulfur. Cool, yeah, it's you put this in the fire earlier, and then, yeah, okay. Cool, so you use this in order to make static electricity, but actually it would be a lot more effective if you did this, and he takes the flag off of the pole that he's carrying around and rubs it around that way, and the static charge makes his hair go all directions. And then he zaps Chrome as well, because why not? So, Sekka's just like, eh, well, you know, it's like baby's first science experiments. We're a bunch of prude. Actually, did you think all this stuff up on your own in this primitive village? And you've got all this stuff in that storehouse. So, have you just been collecting these things yourself? And Krum's like, yeah. I'm sorry. You know, give it back. Your kids collect all sorts of things, right? I found them and smashed them and mixed them and burned them. And when something bad happens, that's sorcery. It's all I've been doing. And so Senku smirks when he learns all this because he's like, hey, see this, Tsukasa? You can kill me. You can kill whoever you want. But try as you might to reset science, we smooth and shiny monkeys. Going back to that again, it's such a weird phrase.
Just be glad they're not talking about the yellow monkeys or the muscles of the monkeys or anything like that.
No color is mentioned. There's no muscles of a black man. But yeah, he says, we smooth and shiny monkeys have among us bad blockheads like this one who will experiment with everything. And they'll always be there to revive a scientific civilization. And so from there, Senku's like, hey, you know, if you keep this up, you'll be one of the ones that Tsukasa tries to kill. So you should join me in my kingdom of science, because that's the way that you're going to survive. He says it kind of menacingly, though, because he's like, you're going to be my servant, you know? So, anyway, also I'm going to be using the science storehouse of yours, too. And Krupp's like, no! I would rather die than back down from this battle, so one more contest between you and me. If you come to me and leave our village for good, if you win, it's all yours, me and my storehouse. And Senku's like, okay. Get ready for some bad skills. No one's ever matched you when it comes to this. Face me in a battle and the art of adding.
Da, 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 da.
Immediately Kohaku's like, I have a feeling that Senku is even more unmatched there. And immediately just like, not even like really showing what happened, just a graphic of Senku standing triumphantly with math equations in the background behind him, and the little pop-up science storehouse and Chrome obtained.
Like, the dude's got fucking E equals MC squared on his shirt. That dude doesn't even know what that means. Granted, I'm not sure I would either, but, you know.
It means that energy is, if you completely destroy an object and turn it into pure energy, the amount of energy is equal to the mass of the object times the speed of light squared.
It means science shit happens, and there's a reason for it.
So,
you mean sorcery
this
happens.
Was a really entertaining chapter, I have to say.
That's the scenario. If this were to be me and Nick would be obviously Senku, and I would be Chrome now. Where I'm just like, I don't know how this works, so it must be sorcery!
I really like Chrome. I love the way that he talks. I love the way he goes, bad! I love the, you know, the faces that he makes, the phenomenal arrogance that he has, and the panic that he had, the anal face, like you said. Really fun chapter. Loved it.
Yeah, I'm surprised actually at how much I enjoyed it, because it was a little bit strange where we got a character who was like, oh, my thing's also science, but it's in a very different way than how Senku does it, because he doesn't even know it's science per se. He just knows these things have different effects, and he considers it all a sorcery that only he knows. It's a very primitive way of kind of looking at it, but it makes for a really fun character, and I'm kind of excited to see what happens if he's joining this group. What's going to happen when he like runs into Taiju? And like they interact, because this is going to be such a different like kind of person interacting with him at this point.
Yeah, like how is that going to turn? Which of the two of them is like the smarter one? I also do like the bit of appreciation that, you know, Senku comes to the realization, you know, because he's just been really lording it over these people with his superior knowledge and being kind of a dick to them. But I like the moment that he has where he realizes, hey, the fact that this guy learned all this stuff from basically nothing is really impressive. So he gives him credit for that. You know, the guy probably basically invented math. So,
he like goes into his room and he's like, what are all these pieces of paper lying around? Like, just old inventions, things like that that didn't work out. There's one here just says zero on it. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get back to that one later. I haven't finished that one. I got some things to work out on it. Don't divide by that. So, don't.
It causes bad shit to happen. All
right. I thought the chapter was fine. I'm not particularly a big Dr. Stone fan.
What?
Yeah, I know. Everybody says that. I think I have a bit of a chip on my shoulder because when it started, everybody was like, this has never been done before. It's so original. It's like, I've read like 8 series that are exactly, not exactly, but like, so like, this is like, no, it's super original. It's like, stop telling me that Black Clover is not original. And then going around and telling me Dr. Stone is. So I've got a chip on my shoulder. But, no, I mean, I thought this chapter was fine. I did really like Senku being like, oh, yeah, well, they're still dumb, but, you know, I appreciate what they've done. Like, it's impressive what they've done. I really didn't like Senku at first, and he's slowly endearing himself to me. So I appreciate that. I do like the new characters, though. Crumb's pretty funny.
Is he an icky man?
No. Oh. God, no. There are no, no.
Would Tsukasa be an Ikemon if he weren't a murderous psychopath?
No, he's still an Ikemon. He's just a creep.
Oh, so being a murderous psychopath doesn't disqualify.
I mean, yeah, it's just looks, you know?
So I'm still, I can still be an Ikemon.
Yes, of course.
He does have the miraculous, was automatically braided hair when he shattered from
that's
stones.
That's definitely a plus in the Ikemen comp.
Dude went naked fishing as like his third action after he'd been revived from a thousands year long coma, so.
He knows he has to get those Ikemen points up real fast.
Yeah. I'm gonna end up on Survivor and I'm going to be like, I'm gonna be super Ikemon this, so the third day in there I'm like, hey guys, I'm gonna go fishing. Why are you taking off your pants? Well, that's what Ikemen would do, so, you know.
Like, no, put it on! Put it on!
They're like, oh, you're so not Ikemon. I don't know what that means, but you're not.
Vote him off!
So, like, everyone unanimously voted for you. Despite you having the immunity idol, you're still leaving. I'm just like, this is bullshit. I'm taking off my pants as I leave.
The producers say, you gotta go.
Ikemon for life! They're like, we don't know what Ikemon is. We're worried it's some kind of satanic curse you're screaming out. Just please leave. We're gonna have to edit you out of so many scenes.
All right, let's move on, Chris. Let's take us through.
So, yes, We Never Learn, question 22. A former tutor's secret spot is X. Ooh, and the cover page is our three female classmates and their teacher, who is kind of seen in a couch
the old
in front
tutor,
of them.
The former tutor, yes.
In a very elegant pose. And you'd think, like, okay, just a cool color page. I think it's, like, there's actually the page after that is a legitimate follow-up as though that shot was just taken in real life. I don't know if it's supposed to be canon with the rest of the chapter, but the page following is, like Takamoto's like, oh, jeez, that holding that pose for so long is so irritating. And Furuhashi's just like, do you think it's really juice?
This is the second time We Never Learn has done something like this. Like, during when they changed their summer uniforms, they had the, like, one-page little one-shot that happened, too.
Did they? I thought that was actually supposed to be maybe it was. Maybe it's because the transition there wasn't as dry. Because this one, it's like, oh, the teacher's like, I don't care. Let's just done. Like, we're done with this. And then Yuega's like, oh, hey. Your eyes are like half closed in every one of these shots. And it's just like, fine, I guess we'll take another photo again. Is this way going to get my eyes a little better? And the other, like, the classmates are just like, she's such a, like, girly girl. She has to get her photo right, essentially. And then just hard cuts away to Yuega walking from school. So,
So the, in the Japanese version, in the print version, clearly, so it goes color page, and then the next page is the back of the color page, and it's all in blue ink. So it makes it more of a hard difference between it. So it's not
this
as...
This is not part of the rest of the chapter.
Yeah, and they usually do something like that where, like, if there's a manga page right after a color page, like on the back of the color page, it'll be in, like, a blue ink or something like that. But in this case, it really helps with the, okay, this page goes with the color page, and then now the chapter's beginning.
Okay. So normally there would be, so this is probably printed on the back of the color page in Japan.
Yeah.
And normally if there weren't this sort of thing, it would just be blue ink, essentially.
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes it more obvious because, yeah, when I read this at first, I was like, wait, what? Now he's like studying? What? It doesn't make any sense.
There's also a little moment that I want to make note of because there's a lot of, you know, banter going on between them through the page. And so at the start of it, Fumino is like, hey, do you think that this is alcohol? Because they're all holding wine glasses in the picture. And Ogata says, no, of course not. It's juice. And when they're when it comes to the point where they're commenting on, oh, well, all these are like blurry and Sensei's eyes are half closed. It's like, and so they're all commenting on that except for Ogata, who's just going.
She has nothing to add and she's thirsty, Nick.
All right. So our chapter proper begins with Yeaga. He's walking by and he sees a cat up in a tree.
Meow.
And Yeaga, wait,
Superman!
Is there a cat on this podcast, Nick? Cat Nick? A cat's on the podcast. Not since my fat, overweight cat was snoring, picked up on the podcast, has a cat been on Weekly Manga Recap. You need to tell that story then too about how you name all your cats mice after drugs and you realize how big of an issue that is when you need to talk to refer to it.
All right, so I've got two cats and one of them's stupid and doesn't really care about these toys, but I got these little mice for my big boy cat because he doesn't really play a lot, and they're drugs to him. Like, he can't get enough of these stupid mice. But, like, I keep losing them, or he keeps hiding them. And he's so obsessed with them, we named the first one Crack Mousy. And then, like, somehow it got lost, so we named the next one Heroin Mousy. And the last one's called Cocaine Mousy. But, like, it's the summertime, so, like, we'll be playing with him and these mice in the evening, and, like, the windows are up, and I'm like, where's Heroin? Where's your Heroin, buddy? Let's go get you some Heroin.
I can't find the crack anymore. Where did crack go?
Yeah,
we didn't lose the crack.
Yeah, where's crack? Oh, man, do you want cocaine now? I'll get you some, buddy. I'm like, oh, God, I hope my neighbors aren't hearing this.
Neighbors just outside the window are like, I knew that black clover would destroy that girl's mind. They're transplants from South Carolina, by the way. That's why they sound like that. So Yueka sees a cat up in the tree, and, of course, he has to go save it. It's just in his nature. And at the same time, walking by is Kirisu, their teacher, the tutor, former tutor of the girls. Yueka goes to pick up the cat. The cat's like, I don't like cute boys. I don't like good boys. Fuck you. And jumps away. Cause cats.
Bad boys only.
Cats are dumb like that. They would jump away from the hand trying to help them. And as this cat is nearing the ground, Kirisu reaches out and grabs it, with very delicate footwork. And, Yueka kind of notes, like, wow, that was really nimble. However, she then lands on a rock and hurts her ankle. I guess twists her ankle, probably. So Yueka carries her home all the way inside and is like, oh, I didn't realize you live so close to my house. Well, I guess I'll see you later. And she's like, all right, bye. Slam. Crash! And Yueka's like, teacher? Teacher, are you okay? Bump, bump, bump. Teacher?
If you're perfectly fine, don't say anything. Okay,
oh,
bye.
God damn it.
Yeah. Chapter over.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, teacher, but I'm not hearing anything, so I'm coming in. And he opens the door and sees her butt.
At least she wasn't already undressing.
Yes, that's actually the one thing to note is that she was still fully clothed at this point. She just happens to be, like,
buried from like her shoulders up into like underneath a pile of mess.
And there's no panty shot skirt, either.
There
that
isn't.
Skirt is eating her ass. Like,
Yuega finds that her place is a huge mess, which is shocking. You'd think an adult like her would be a little bit more responsible, but we cut away. Yuega's pulled her out of the garbage, essentially, and she says, "All right, fine. I'm gonna go change, and then I'll make some tea." And Yuega's kind of nervous because he's just like, "Oh man, she's changing clothes over there. Why am I even thinking about that? Why am I doing this?" It's just like, "No, you're blossoming into such a nervous little boy."
Megashima comes in. "I've got it bad, got it bad, got it bad.
You owe me $20.
Buy my ramen."
And Kirisu comes back and she's wearing her old high school gym outfit. And Yuega's like, "I probably should have expected that." You almost wonder what was he expecting in his mind, because in my mind, I certainly like her to come out in like a baby doll. She's like, "It's the only thing I had." It's just like, that can't be right. It can't be true.
All I've got to wear is this thong and a towel to sling over my shoulders.
All I had that was clean were these two band-aids over my nipples and a dish towel. Like, that can't be right.
All I've got to wear is this wet t-shirt that has "Ride Me" written on it.
So they have
I'll put this baseball cap over my crotch that says, "Yuega, I want you."
It means a different Yuega. Wink, wink.
I just had this lying around.
You know, that's what we have as adults. So they start to have, like a conversation. And she ices on, like, "Naturally, only in front of you, though, because you've already seen me around. Hiding anything now would be a waste of time." Yuega's like, "Man, if you took that line out of context, that would be really awkward." "So, Yuega-kun, take it out." Like, "What? No! My innocence!" And I like that his idea is, "I don't have any money on me." Like, he thinks, he's like, "Wait, that sounds suggestive at first. No, she must mean she wants me to pay her." She's like, "No, you idiot, let me see your notes." And they start to have like a conversation, because basically he was having some trouble with some of his history stuff. And she's explaining it. She's going through. There's a stupid moment where Yuega puts his hand like back as he's relaxing and grabs onto her bra and is like, "Huh? What's this?" And like pulls it up and she's just like, "You saw nothing." And Yuega has this line then where he's like, "Sensei, I can't take it anymore." And she immediately assumes he's about to try to proposition her, because he's just like, "Please let me tidy up." And she's like, "How impure! You're disgusting! A child saying that!"
Yuega has no idea what she's talking about.
And he's just like, "Impure?" She's like, "Yeah, let's clean up right now. Do it."
All right, so the panel where she's sitting, like, you see her butt, like, goodness, girl, that is just, like, all her clothes really defend her ass.
Her well, like...
Like, that just, like, I feel, I was telling my husband when we were talking about this chapter, like, I just want to, like, take out this imaginary wedgie I now have. Like, oh, girl, fix that, please.
Do girls in this series not, like, wear clothes that fit them? Because it's not just her, it's also Iruka.
As I say, Takamoto, I understand why she's constantly doing her fucking wedgie snap, because... This is actually what we haven't realized. This is a fantasy manga. And like in this world, like other worlds, they might have Reishu or Chakra or, you know, whatever power source they have. In this world, your power source is based on the significance of the wedgie you have. And it's a constant battle to kind of release it before it builds up too much and destroys you.
It's your waist.
Your ass is constantly eating.
This is going to become a battle manga against wedgies by the end of it. Mark my words. So they clean up and Yuega notices this trophy case full of different awards and he sees a shot of Kirisu, in ice skating attire, and she presumably won all these different ice skating awards. He's like, "I didn't realize you were an ice skater." And she covers it up with a tarp and she's like, "Yeah, I was, and it wasn't that great." And she basically explains kind of bluntly. She's like, "It wasn't really a good decision for me to do it. Do you know how long, like, ice skating careers last? Early 20s. And then after that, you're just not as good anymore, and
you've wasted everything. You've used up your formative education years, and you have no future beyond that. And it was foolish of me to do it. You know, she explains it in third person, but very quickly Ewake is like, "You're talking about you, aren't you?" She's like, "No! That's my twin
sister! I said my friend!
Yeah, stupid! That's my twin sister! She did it! I've always been a teacher. I've always been a smart person. I'm super smart. Now watch as I fucking butt talks to you in this one panel." Like, she has this like legitimately interesting explanation where she explains, she's like, "Look, I'm going to be harsh because I am going to keep these girls from making the worst mistake of their lives. I get that they want to have this big inspiration, but it is not what they should be doing, and they're going to come to regret it later on." And Yuega kind of responds like, "I don't know. I think maybe there is a value. Like, even though I see your point, I think there's still a value in them trying to go for what they want." But the panel, he says, "I don't know," is like, it's him at like kneeling level and her standing up, so it's her at butt level, and the speech bubble stops right before her butt crack, so you can't.
It's that wedgie speaking.
You must feed me more pants. I will destroy your pitiful world.
Like, oh, teacher, your wedgie's talking. She's like, "You heard nothing." They've already gotten to her. He just explains. He's like, "Look, I'm a student myself. I don't have the same experience as you, and I'm not sure I have what it takes to make them happy. But when they work hard, it's supposedly something they can't do. If the alternative is abandoning them and saying quit while you're ahead, then I'd rather stand tall and walk the path of regret by their sides." And, I kind of like that notion. It's a difference of opinion that they don't really point out really if one side is a more knowledgeable route than any other. You know, this is something that comes up a lot in sports manga. Like, this came up as a big point in Haikyuu, where, like, third years were brought up, like, "Hey, you can stay on the team, but you're not gonna get into a good school after this. Like, you're really damaging your, you know, professional future." And they all were like, "Yeah, we get the seriousness of it, but we're all gonna take this." I'm kind of interested to see that this doesn't yet fully support the idea that I guess Jump would tend to go with of follow your dreams, kids. That's what works out the best. Kirsty's like, "I really wasted a lot of my life doing that shit."
But have that context because, you know, before she was just kind of this naysayer we didn't really know much about, but to have her have that personal history connection to the point that she's making is really valuable, I think.
Yeah. This really goes to, it's that thing we've mentioned so many times of like when We Never Learn could be so frustrating when it's like Takamoto forgot her bra this chapter. And then you're just like, you can write really interesting characters and moments. Why do you settle on like, "Oh no, her wedgie's too big this week." Like, come on.
Well, you know, you have to have, it has to even out, or maybe you have to earn enough like intelligence points by doing the stupid stuff to,
I was gonna say, how am I earning intelligence points by reading the chapters where Takamoto's like, "I forgot my bra again!" she thanks him for cleaning and it's like, "Yeah." And he's like, no, I should be thanking you because you helped me study." And, he's like, "By the way, I know it's a little late to bring this up, but, like, it was okay for you to have me in your house, right? Like, letting a student, a man into your apartment?" She's like, "Oh, please, a man, you're 10 years too old to be calling yourself that." Slam. And then she like closes the door and then falls to her knees. She's like, "Oh my god, it was the first time I've had a man inside my house. Oh, I should make cleaning a bigger regular habit." I like the teacher.
Oh no.
I don't think she's gonna fall into the harem. I think she's just meant to be this very, an adult who, like, places herself in this very, like, not sophisticated, but very professional adult manner, and then you find she's clearly not, like, got adulting down yet. Like, she's clearly...
Yeah. she's really trying to play a part that she can keep up to a certain extent.
Yeah. What was it, the first kind of chapter they had with this was when, he has that whole, like, really tense mean, and he sees her after school, and she's like walking around the farmer's market in like sweatpants and like pajama top, and she's just like, get out of here. You saw nothing. Like, throw a smoke bomb down, shit.
I do think our character's endearing herself a lot more, and it's nice to get that context for why she's so severe with her way of kind of looking at Uwaga's mentoring.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, before it was just like, you're kind of a jerk, aren't you? And now it's like, oh, okay. I mean, you can still see what she's saying is very jerky, but it's, you know, she's doing it in a way to try to help her students. It's not, she's not just an asshole.
She's doing it, in her mind, for their benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this chapter a lot, though.
All right. The Promised Neverland, Chapter 46, Sonju and Mujica. Last time, Rei and Emma discovered that the people that were trying to save them were actually demons. And Rei reveals that he just figured this out, not because of like some subtle hint or anything, that he was just like, you're good, demon fate. I can see your demon fate.
You have far toes. That's what a demon would have.
So, and Emma's like, oh, wow, I didn't notice that, because you're so similar to a human in everything and every other way. But the more she thinks about it, the more she realizes just how suspicious everything that's been going on is, the fact that they were separated from the other kids, the fact that they don't, you know, actually know what time of the day it is or how long they've been asleep. And she's like, oh my God, what if they're going to eat us? What if they've already eaten the other kids? What's going on? She's panicking.
What if they eat me?
So, and also, you know, they've got the woman in front of them and they've got the guy behind them too. And, Ray's just like, why just save us humans? You're food.
Hashtag Ray.
And, the man says, hey, Muji guy, hey, you've gone too far. You know, you took the wrong path again. And, he's like, yeah, what's wrong? They look really pale too. And, Mujica is also saying like, well, Sanju, you know, you're kind of freaking them out too because you've got that freaking weapon over your shoulders and you showed up all intimidating like right when they were getting suspicious. So, and he says something really weird, which is, of course I did. There are little kids over there. What if they play with it by accident? They could get hurt.
This dude has done so little thus far, and I'm in love with him. He's got such a cool design, and he's just like, well, of course I brought my enormous scythe over there. The children could hurt themselves.
Always thinking of others.
This giant fucking menacing-looking motherfucker with his hood on, his bandaged-up claws. He's just like, but what if the children hurt themselves?
Oh, man. And so...
How are they going to grow up big and strong and light the world with their smiles if they've hurt themselves?
Now drink your milk, kids!
I'm going to go get them their nutritious breakfast now. That is the most important meal of the day.
You just turned into a cereal mascot. It's great!
But he just keeps bringing up really dark themes. He's like, now remember, kids, you're wanting to make sure you work out at least 60 minutes a day. When the demons come after you trying to devour your bones, you need to have that cardio. So get off that couch and remember at least an hour of exercise every day. Wickety wickety, kids.
It's a good way to bring out the tiger in you, as opposed to getting eaten by the tiger like demons.
What's his, what would be like his cool 90s catchphrase? He's like, suck an egg, nerds!
What the hell?
Oh, man.
Get you on the flip side, dorkopotamus!
Work on your cardio, losers! Oh, man. Emma has a really big freak out because, you know, Rei is demanding answers, but Emma is just like, what did you do to the other kids? And she rushes off down the tunnel that Sanju came from. And, Sanju's like, oh, hey, kid, sorry, kiddo. What, so What was your question?
What was your question again, nerd? He's like, why me? He's like, call me a nerd.
Alternately really endearing and good with kids while insulting them.
He's like, aw, hold on, buddy. What's your little opinion? What's your little smart man question? Like, just like ruffling his hair. He's like, stop. I'm supposed to be a partner. You're not supposed to treat me like this.
Oh, that's nice. You've got a really high opinion of yourself, you little nerd. You're completely...
Suck an egg, you nerd. Here's a juice box. He's like, I will not be below with a juice box. But I am thirsty. I'm not happy about it.
Actually, no. I don't want this juice box. Give me a Capri Sun.
Organic Capri Sun, though.
Organic Capri Sun. So, Inside You says, demons, eh? I remember being called that before. Emma reaches where all the kids are, and of course they're okay.
Okay.
Yeah, a bunch of them, you know, swarm her and glomp her, and they're like, oh, you're better now, yeah! And Guild is trying to stop them, like, she's not all better yet! No, stop hurting her! Mujica, says, like, I'm sorry, that, you know, you freaked out. No, we didn't have any intent of harming you. My name is Mujica, this is Sanju, and they take their hoods off. And they do look really cool. They look like they look kind of like Aaron Carr, honestly, because they've got these hard mask-like features over their faces.
I can see that, yeah.
But I really like the way that Sanju looks with his cloak off, the way that his hair comes out around his head. He looks very Final Fantasy.
But like good Final Fantasy, not like. I don't like new Final Fantasy. I don't like those boys, those Prontos and those Noctises and all that nonsense. I don't understand you anymore. In my day, you just had really big swords and were samurais, and a lot of people would say that was the new school that was awful, and in their day, they all just had very colorful hair.
I love Prontos.
I used to get it back when before they changed what it was, but it'll happen to you.
You need to work on your Grandpa Simpson there, Nick.
Sorry.
But I love anyway, the quote.
So Mujica says, we don't eat humans, and that's why we won't eat you or any of the others, so please don't worry. And so everyone sits around this little campfire, and they have soup together. Very normal looking soup too. Like I was kind of half expecting like worms and bugs to come floating out of it, but no, it's just vegetables.
The worms are weighed down by the vegetables.
Right, they sink. Yes, yeah. Very dense worms. So
I bet if Gray made a boat out of them, though, it'd still float. This is when I get the motherfucker who's going to be like, I'm actually a boatologist. I specialize in the science of making boats, and I will let you know that an ice boat would float and sail with its sails made out of ice.
And, you know, Ray and Emma are observing the other kids and realizing, oh, well, it looks like the kids have been really treated well while we've been out. And Gilda and Don are reassuring them, and you know, Gilda says like, "Hey, you know, yeah, we've been eating this food before. We're fine. It's safe to eat." Don says they went back and saved you both. They rescued us, so we should believe in them. And there's a brief moment where Sanju and Mujica clasp their hands in front of their heads. And they say, for this blessed meal, we celebrate our fortune. We appreciate heaven, earth, and our life. Thank you for this food. Very, very religious. And as we find out later, it is actually just flat out, yeah, they're just religious people. After all the kids fall asleep, Emma and Ray go to have a conversation with Mujica and Sanju. You know, obviously, they've got a bunch of questions to ask. And Emma says, yeah, you know, I never thought that there could be demons who wouldn't eat us. And Sanju says, well, you know, you were right to be cautious because human flesh is special to demons, especially the brain. There are only a few like us. Most demons would start drooling and take a bite if they saw a human, so it's better to think of all of them as your enemy. And he just says that the only reason they don't do it is because they're religious. We decide not to eat humans for our faith. But only humans. We'll eat anything else other than human flesh. He takes out like a puppy dog.
It's like the cutest little cat. He's like, look at this cat. Look at how adorable it is. Watch me insert it into my 9 mouth holes. It's just like a meat grinder in his mouth. So we're not perfect, but we won't eat you kids. Suck an egg, nerds. Good night.
Look at this cat. Isn't it adorable? I'm eating it in front of you now. Losers. There's a kickflip off the wall.
Backwards hat appears on him. He's like, sleep tight, dorkopotamuses.
Goes to hang out with the giant with his boombox.
Flips his chair around. Kids, let me tell you about how real demons work.
Oh, man, he's sitting in his chair backwards. It makes him cool and approachable. Let's listen to what he has to say.
I want to see Ray be like, I could be like that. I could be like that, you know? And, like, now he has this goal to work
towards. I just don't want to
sell out. I like it. In his mind, he's just like, oh, my God, there's someone more hipster than I am. This can't be right. Guys, I don't eat humans either. I also think I'm wrong, but I'll eat other stuff. They're like, Ray, you didn't eat humans to begin with, you fucking monster. He's like, no, I don't because I'm progressive. Hashtag Ray. Hashtag Ray, why aren't you paying attention to me? Like, everyone's like, just let him be. He's like, no!
Emma, watch me eat this cat too!
He's like,
choking a cat's butt hanging out of his mouth. He's like,
drag it out of his mouth, like, the cat's just hanging off.
She's just like, no, if I give you attention, it just encourages you.
That was the chapter.
This is super exciting.
They ended by asking him what's going on in the world right now. Yeah, that's it. We're done.
That's super exciting. I love these two new characters. I love the way this is going. We're learning a lot, and I'm super into the Promised Neverland. It's back to like that spot of being like, I can't wait to find out what happens next week.
Yeah, it's super cool. I really like that they're demons because I think I might prefer if they were humans, but they look so cool. Like their designs are so neat. I wanted them to be humans just to see that potential of maybe other humans out there. But
we still have William Minerva. Remember that neither of these two have any idea who he is apparently, so.
Well, so my theory is that Minerva, like their religion, Minerva has something to do with it.
It's possible.
It's entirely possible, yeah.
I don't know what it would be, but yeah, I'm really excited to see more of these new characters. Oh, wait, I got one more thing. I forgot. I think it was Ginger mentioned in the chat earlier that you can pre-order the graphic novel for the first volume of Promised Neverland now on Amazon.
Ooh.
And then, oh goodness, somebody else mentioned that the artist has an art book coming out in English soon as well.
Oh, that's going to be dope.
Yeah, so pre-order.
We've seen a lot of really cool like cover pages and things like that from The Promised Neverland, so that's definitely going to be an artwork.
It's a really nice book. It's a really, really nice book.
Get it together, Nick.
All right.
You gotta get your wind back so you can argue with Annalise about how awful Black Clover is.
Bring it, buddy, bring it!
All right, Black Clover, page 116. The Vice Captain of the Coral Peacocks. It's about the Vice Captain of the Coral Peacocks. Cursed Vermilion, who, as we established in the last chapter, is Mimosa's older brother.
He's
and
so
is
good.
Super Bishonen. Just like,
You said, Annalise, that this is somebody, right?
Okay, so we're not 100% sure. Kirsch is, I guess it's a type of alcohol, which goes with mimosa. Okay. Like the names work together. And I guess.
So their parents were alcoholics.
Potentially.
That explains him.
But, and it also works with, I guess, something about like cherry blossoms and Kirsch go together, something like that. But what we're really hoping is that this is the Black Clover English editor's character, because Tabata Sensei has a tendency of putting people meets in his series.
And so Alexis Kirsch is the name of the English editor.
Yeah, so we're really hoping that Kirsch is Alexi's character.
So we might be seeing Professor Jump inside of a manga at this point.
Yes, he is almost this fabulous in person.
I like to think that Alexi would be very honored to have that kind of hair in contrast, because that dude has a glorious set of hair. That's some Fabio-level shit. That shit just sparkles naturally.
Yes. Kirsch is just amazing. He's so amazing.
So
it's about just how great he is. Oh, he's so good.
Kirsch goes like, "Why is the world crawling with unlovely things? And why, in the midst of all that, was I born with such beauty? The pain."
Weirdo alert!
Yeah, that's what Asta says, and it's just like, "Yeah, Asta, yeah, you're right. Like, I got nothing to say to you. No, yeah, you're right on."
The one time Nick is on Asta's side.
Yeah, no, he's right. Like, he's completely correct. Magna, of course, is upset that he has to work with such a weirdo. And Kirsch is just like, "Oh, it's all right, ugly one. I sympathize with your envy of my beauty." And Magna's like,
"Wait, who's?"
It's not important what he actually said.
Okay. I was like, what?
It's more important the face that he's making than the words that he's saying. What's her face?
Soul. Soul.
What? Soul, right. It's like, why is he so gorgeous? It's so gross. I don't really get it, but okay. Like, he's so attractive that he's unattractive is basically what she says.
Anlia's rebuttal?
Yeah, I mean, we all know that her big thing is she hates guys. So she's like, "Why is this guy so pretty? Guy shouldn't be pretty, that's nasty." And he's a narcissist.
I get what you're saying. You're saying Nick is an ugly stupid head, gotcha.
Yeah, you're a stupid head, Nick. You narcissist, boy.
So, and Kirsch is like, "Oh, ladies should not speak in such dirty terms. Oh, your figure is so beautiful. Why not improve yourself with me as your example? Oh, Mimosa, you have come to gaze on my beauty, little sister. Don't let my dazzling looks give you a heart attack." She's seen you before, so I don't know why she would.
Is this what Alexi's like in the office?
Yes.
He spins around when he approaches her desk, and he's just like, "Annalise, I'm more beautiful than you are." Away, and then I fucking floats away.
I'm like, "No,
away.
Can I get the script? Please come back."
He's like, "Real.
Perhaps when you're less ugly and then my beauty." Just
he
like
sparkles and everything.
You're like, "Man, I hate working with Alexi. He's so annoying."
This would be like if you took Fubuki and Asuka and you turned Fubuki up to like a 30. I'm sorry, that's a GX reference. So, so he goes around and Mimosa is just flat out saying, like, "Your extreme narcissism is disturbing," which is a great line, I will say. They have a little bit of a back and forth until eventually he comes across Asta. He's like, "You are Asta the peasant, are you?" And I was just like, "Oh, yeah, nice to meet you. Don't take that friendly tone with me, Phil."
See, this is how Alexi looks at me. Like, he's
when you come in and you're
Asta
cosplay.
Like, he's like, "Ugh. Ugh. Freelancer. Ugh, get out of my sight." Okay.
And Kirsch is just like, "You're not mannerisms and your pants and..."
And it says, bodies should be beautiful just as they are. I don't see the point in training them. That's something weak people do. It's just like, well, I was weak, yeah, because I didn't have mana. That's why I trained. So maybe they're ugly, but these are my weapons. And Kira's like,
This is one of my favorite things about Asta, because he's a kind of annoying, and he's kind of dumb, but he's so positive. Like, yeah, sure, they're ugly, but I had to train really hard. And yeah, I don't have any mana, but I'm going to do my best. And it's just like, oh, you're a simple boy. I love that.
Asta does come across really well in this chapter, I will say. Every now and again, he has a moment where it's like, okay, that's pretty cool. And this is one of them, because it seems to actually really exemplify what he's supposed to be about, which is, yeah, that positive, never say die attitude that you kind of, basically, you know, at the start of the podcast, we talked about, like, Kirishima has that in his best moments, but then he has that crippling self-loathing, you know. It's kind of like Asta is the type of person that Kirishima is, like, striving to be in a lot of ways. And I can see why, you know, it's like, you can have that kind of inspirational figure, this nice, positive, reacts to insults by turning them around into a positive on himself guy.
No.
It's just that Kirsch is so goddamn annoying.
love him! He's so fabulous!
So, Mimosa, because Kirsch says, the size of the vessel into which an individual's mana is poured is determined from birth. Unsightly struggling won't change its shape. So Mimosa says, hey Kirsch, make sure you win this match. And Kirsch is like, oh, my chance of finally got the truth to you! And Mimosa says, because in the next round we're gonna slaughter you.
I really like...
They don't have a very good sibling relationship, do they?
Nah, I like how she smile, like, whenever she's, like, super cruel to anybody, it's with a smile on her face. She's just like, oh, I'm gonna tear your entrails out, haha. And I like that about Mimosa, but here's saying, you know, the size of the vessel, blah, 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 unsightly struggling, won't change its shape. Bring goes back to, early on when, they go to the dungeon and that you first meet Klaus and, Mimosa. And Mimosa mentions that most nobles don't really train or anything. So they make fun of Noelle because she had to train.
Right.
And she's like, no, I see that as something really interesting. So it's just another example of nobles being like, oh, why do you have to train? Oh, peasant, yuck. So I like that kind of, you know, light callback to that.
The way that Mimosa's been the last few chapters, it really kind of makes me wish that she has been a more regular character, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because... I mean, we're seeing more sides to her that really did not get exemplified in her first appearance. She really did not get to do a lot when she first showed up because she was just stuck being, you know, the white mage. And that
was
it.
Yeah. She's really grown incredibly, especially in these in this arc, really. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
But we get the second match underway with Kirsch. Along with Sol and Magna going up against...
Well, does Annalise know all their names?
No, I don't... I'm not
going to
look
at the guys who are going to lose.
Team D.
And already in the ring, Team D! The king is observing while stuff is going on. He's got the Wizard King next to him as, you know, Magna gets stuff going. And, you know, the king is just like, oh, he's no good. But the Wizard King's like,
I love the Wizard King.
I like to think that the king of the country just has like a very even keeled tone until he goes berserk. So he's just like, fifth class junior peasant. That's no good at all. This is supposed to be us.
There's no way he's ever going to be us. I'm sorry. We get a bit of action being from both Magna and Sol, and in between, Kirsch just kind of comes up.
Like, you have such a crude fighting style. It's not attractive. You're straining too much. Remember that you can use both close and long-range magic. You should learn to read the flow of the enemy's mana and let your mana guide you. No doubt you'll burn more beautifully then. And man, just like, yeah, okay. Soul summons this freaking big old golem to attack another guy, and it stumbles into a bog, and Curtis is like, why are you so sloppy and simple-minded?
I love that, like, his poses could be indicated that he's, like, running up and, like, doing them, but I like to think he's just hurling himself into the air and then posing midway through, like, hey, I believe that you should possibly might as well use your magic in a bit more intelligent of a way. It's just like, hey, I don't know if you know, but like, oh, didn't see that tree bump.
That was not beautiful.
He basically does this big, impressive cherry blossom magic, this, which he refers to as Magic Cherry Blossom Storm of Petals plus My Beautiful Illusion. It just covers the entire battlefield in cherry blossom petals, which basically make everything obscured except for pathways for Soul and Magnus to get to the enemy crystal, which they crack really quickly while he's like, go! Advance down the beautiful primrose path to victory! And they win. And Kirsch sums this up by saying, in this world, sin is being unsightly and failing to notice beauty. And he strikes a pose, and Magna and Soul are just, like, so caught up in it that they pose too. And Kirsch is like, but the greatest sin is my beauty.
I love this chapter because Kirsch is amazing, because he's so like, oh, he's just so punchable, guys. He's so fabulous and awful, and he's so good.
What I like about this is he is like that dislikable, but he's competent. Because so much of the time, I feel like we run into antagonists, or not even necessarily antagonists, but just like shitty people or people with overbearing bad personalities of Black Clover, and they tend to just have nothing to back it up. Like, it's like a dude who's like, I stomp on houses and punch kitties. It's like, what's your magic? He's like, I can make a really big rocket, throw it at you. It's just like, aww. Whereas this is a dude who's just so arrogant in your face about it, and like every one of the other commoners that are like elites that says that to Asta, this is a guy who's like, oh, and I'm actually kind of better than you, whoosh, or something like that. Yeah. It's like, cool.
Yeah, I mean, they even say, like, he's fast and tough, also creepy. How are we gonna beat them? Yeah, and that's their next match. If going against him.
Like, I'm legitimately at this point at a moment where I'm like, how does Asta win? Which never happens in Black Clover. I never wonder.
He's got freaking Super Trap Zerks on his side. That's how he's gonna win.
True.
I mean,
yeah, I think Zerks will take him out, but I want to see Mimosa take him out. I want to see Mimosa be like, I ain't taking this shit. Fuck you, bro. Fuck you. Oh, he's so good.
A few things. Number one, one of the big things going into this tournament was Noelle's going to get a chance to prove herself to her brother. Oh, good job, Mimosa. You just took that. Two, he's just Yumichika. Like, I know that there's only so many freaking archetypes of characters, and we've gone over that, but he really did not leave an impact on me. He's just a guy who's just full of his appearance, and that's literally all there is to him for me. Wasn't impressed by him.
I'm so hurt. You don't like the editor? The English editor? He's gonna be.
I don't know. Does he like give you like pointers on how, on little lines while he like manages to go like horizontal through the air? Like
your letter. Don't use so many ligatures next time.
Oh, forgot about the staircase.
Choosing so many different font sizes doesn't allow the inner beauty of the word to come through.
Thanks, Alexi.
Nick, say you're a huge fan of him. It's the only way we're gonna get a jump podcast.
Nope.
Damn.
Well, I really liked it. I love that he's just this, he's just so over the top and like I mean, even with the end, like, everybody that sees him is just like, oh god, he's so creepy. No, it's not like, oh, this guy's really pretty and look at this gorgeous stuff. It's just like, oh, he's fucking creepy. You know, like, but Sol and Magna just get, like, pulled into it and they're like, oh, it feels so good, but, so creepy. Like, I don't know, I really, really like him. As soon as I saw him, I was just like, this guy is so ridiculous. He's just so funny to me. But yeah, I really appreciate that he's not just all flash. He's got a lot of substance too, and he does look like he'll be a threat. So.
I don't know, it just seems too much like what we've seen from the nobles so far. You know, he's full of himself and he does things that he shouldn't work hard, and he's just another representative of that stereotype that I was sick of in chapter 2.
Yeah, but I think what I'd like about it though is that this one at least feels competent, because usually the story just is directly...
Silvio's confident. There's no shortage, or Silva, what is it, where the Silvos?
You're probably thinking a Nozel. It's the Silva thing.
Nozel.
Yeah. Oh.
Right, Silva. Yeah, family,
you know,
right.
He is competent, but he's not quite as bad as, you know, he's not, he looks down on others, but he also recognizes strength.
Yes,
brothers. Like, solid, yeah, that guy's just a douchebag.
Well, he also doesn't comment much on Asta. He's always more about Noel. He's always kind of being like, ugh, why are you here kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's not that they're doing that just to be assholes. I mean, like, their mom's dead and it's kind of Noel's fault, you know? So they are assholes, but.
My point is that if you're going to have this, you know, he's like, there's been so many just, he comes from a noble family and he's a strong mage characters.
Well, I mean, that's...
And I feel like if you're going to do that, that you should have, that he needs to be, there needs to be more to him than just, you know, pick one of the different pride branches sins for him to define.
I mean, a lot of the others, you know, don't really have any pride branches except for pride. They don't have wrath and, you know, and it's not unusual to have, a lot of nobility, because they make a point early on that it's very uncommon to have commoners make it into the nobles and into the magic knights. Like, there are only a few examples. That's why people are always like, oh, you know, that peasant. Oh, also that peasant. Because it's so unusual and they look down on them, because being a magic knight is a noble profession. Also, he's just fabulous. How can you hate this guy? Look at him flying through the air as he gives surprisingly good advice. Like that really bothers me in a way that, like, look at this dipshit. Like, I love him so much, but he's awful. And, oh no, that's a really good point. Yeah, you should, you know, you should use, you know, more long range in this situation. And yeah, why don't you make 5 golems instead of 1 big one? Yeah, those are good points. Damn it. So he's strong and he's smart and he's just so fabulous.
I like the way that everyone around him interacts with him. I don't like him by himself.
Mm. I think if it was just, yeah, if nobody commented on him, I think he would be a lot more repugnant, but the fact that he's just such a strong character and everybody's just like, what a weirdo! It's just gold to me. But. I have a lot of strong feelings about this series that nobody else agrees with, cause y'all suck! Anyway.
Alright, let's wrap things up with talking about One Piece. Chapter 871, You Can Do It, Caesar!
Go for it.
The plan to escape is underway. Capone has, gone back into his human form. Germa 66 are trying to buy him time while Caesar Clown carries him away. But, oh, Luffy and Sanji popped out in order to fight Big Mom because they're crazy.
Surprise.
Like that. So, fighting continues between Big Mom's pirates and, the 66. While Caesar Clown desperately carries Capone away. And while this is going on, one of the guests at the party, the
one of the gang underworld boss guys. I forget exactly who he is, but it's the large guy with the big furry coat. He's like, oh, look, the treasure of the deep, the tomate box is right over there. Ooh, I could go and get it and just have it. And Dufeld is his name is said. But he gets distracted by the Queen of the Pleasure District, Stussy, ends up tripping and falling down the cake hill right next to the tomato box. He's like, oh, now I can go and get it and open it up. And all of a sudden, he gets shot by this finger gun thing that was shot by Stussy, who was revealed to not just be the Queen of the Pleasure District, but also an intelligence agent from CP Aegis Zero. So, this is interesting.
Yeah, it's something that was kind of alluded Chris? To a couple different times there. Hello?
It's a bit of a twist that she apparently seems to be, associated with some sort of weird government branch then. Well, and she says, that she's going to claim it for the world government.
We knew that CP9 were here, or CP0 were here. We saw them show up a couple times. They also showed up back in the Dressrosa arc as well. So we've seen them around. I do like the way it was executed here, where it's like him diving for it and just being like, finger gun, what the fuck? Oh, god damn it! God damn it!
Ow!
I guess it's the scene, like, how relevant is she going to be going forward? Cause, it looks like shit got real over there.
And, she also catches sight of the, of Morgan's, the, head of the newspapers. And, she's like, hey, yeah, you're gonna make sure that the world hears about it in terms of, he's going to take the fall for this, right? Because she knows that he's hiding around the corner. He's like, oh yeah, sure, as long as I get the scoop on the contents. And she makes some remarks like, yeah, you know, just don't touch it, you know. I get it, you know. And he's like, I'm not a spin doctor, I'm a newsman. Weird little exchange that they have, honestly. But like,
don't you dare question the journalistic integrity of an enormous talking bird in checkered pants.
Wrong!
How dare you?
Oh shit, we've really got to finish up. But he stumbles, as Dufeld does, into the tamale box while they're arguing about this, and sends it crashing over the side of the cake. We cut away before we get to see the result of that, as Big Mom is towering over everybody, taunting Luffy, who Sanji is trying to just kind of headlock and drag away from everything, and Luffy's like, let me punch her! She's calling me a coward! Let me punch! And he even says, like, oh, I'm gonna be the king of the pirates, and goes to attack her, goes into his full gorilla Armin Haki, lays into her, and there's a brief little blink and you'll miss it moment where she summons Armament Haki of her own and just blocks it. Well, shit.
We know she's supposed to be strong.
Yeah, Luffy went after her with his big technique, his ultimate move, and she was completely unfazed by it. And also, the power drains out of him immediately. It's hard to tell exactly what happens here, but Luffy's arm we see it shaking briefly, and then immediately he powers down and says that his power is draining. So, I don't know exactly what happened there, but, yeah.
It might have to do with her soul power. Maybe she's able
could
to
very well.
Maybe, yeah.
She's like, because Luffy says as he does this, like, once I take care of Kaido, I'm coming back for you. And then the power gets drained out of him and he has to be dragged away by Sanji again. And Big Mom says, well, you're never going to be that thing. And anyway, what makes you think you're getting out of here alive? And things start to go from bad to worse pretty immediately. Judge steps up to confront Big Mom. he mentions like, oh, in the wake of a dream of just 66 days, our ancestors were left as wandering ghosts unable to set foot on their homeland, and now I have disgraced their memory. To think I entrusted you with a soul of 3 centuries of longing, I despise myself. And Big Mom essentially says, whatever. Summons down a thunderbolt to strike him from Prometheus. Not Prometheus, the other one. His helmet shatters. Ichiji and Neji, you know, being the emotionless soldiers that they are, react to their father being hurt by trying to go and save him. You know, because they don't have emotions because of the experiment. They don't have emotions at all.
You've just made my Kingdom Hearts, as explained by manga, much easier, Nick.
Making notes. because the guards have left them, what's his name? God, the frickin'... I've had so many chances to learn this guy's name. I keep forgetting it. Which candy guy.
Oh, which Pero, candy guy? Pero or something like that?
No, not Perospero. The Foresight guy.
Katagiri, I think?
I think that's it.
Something along those lines. The Jellybean guy.
Yes. So he stands in their path in order to stop them from getting away. More pirates are waiting below to grab them. Ichiji just does spin around and tries to attack him. And then throws Caesar Clown further away. But Caesar Clown is cut off by another Caesar Clown, whom he gets mad at very cartoonishly because he's like, move it! Who do you think you are? Are you me? No, you can't be me. I'm me! Oh, and Brulé has shown up. She's here to get her revenge. Who could have seen that coming? So, it looks like things are just done. The German 66 are down. Even Sanji and Luffy are down. Big Mom is grabbing people in her hands. The Big Mom powers are swarming all around them. Caesar Clown and Capone have no escape routes left. And so Jinbei and Pedro and the others are thinking about emerging so that they can help to fight their way out. Big Mom says, let's begin the execution. And then we cut back to the tomato box, which continues to fall, and crashes into the ground, and a huge-ass explosion goes off. So powerful that it starts to rock the cake that they're all on, and that is where we end the chapter.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's been a long-term payoff for that tomato box.
Mm-hmm.
That shit was, what, 4 years ago, I think, or 3 years ago now at this point? That was Fishman Island.
It's been a long time, yeah. But looks like this is the way that they're getting out of this bind. Not by Deus Ex Machina, by the thing that was set up and established a long time ago. They're being saved by Chekhov's gun. In fact. So, there you go.
Some days, Nick, you just can't get rid of a bomb. Hashtag Adam West.
Is the best Batman.
You don't understand. Batman has always kind of had a happiness to him, and you just don't understand it because you only like Grimdark. I also like only Grimdark. In fact, that's the only way I'll take Superman, but I'm all kinds of superhero hipster.
He like chooses like a really happy-go-lucky hero. You have to have Spider-Man be Grimdark and Batman be super happy.
He's like, you don't understand. Booster Gold has always been meant to be a very dark hero with a very sinister origin. It's like, I don't think he is. He's like an oozer from the future, isn't he?
you just don't understand his true origins. This is an alright chapter. It was very much a transitional one, though. So I think that there's not really going to be anything that really blows us away until next week.
Yeah.
So that's it.
All right. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, we've got to get out of here. Favorites. Favorite series. Weekly MVP.
Annalise, you,
all right. So this is going to surprise nobody, but for me, it's Black Clover and Kirsch with We Never Learn as a really close second. I really did like that chapter, but Kirsch is just so, oh, I love him so much. And the entire chapter, like, as I was working on it, I was laughing so much during it, so I thought it was really good. Bring it, haters. Bring it.
My chapter of the week, I think I'm going to give to My Hero Academia. I think it was a really good chapter this week. Just a great story, but my character MVP is going to go to Chrome from Dr. Stone, just because he was such a fun and amusing character all the way through.
I totally get that. I am torn on this because there are certain things that I really want to acknowledge with it. What I've ended up going eventually was I really did think about making it Chrome, but I went with Dr. Stone for my series and the demons for Promised Neverland.
I really like that. You're picking multiple characters for a character MVP?
No.
Sungju? Yeah, big one.
Okay, that's fine.
It was even before we started, you know, making jokes about him and stuff. I do really like the attitude that he has about him. Like the conversation that he has with Ray and Emma at the end of the chapter, but also just the approach that he has. And also, he just has a really cool design. So.
Oh, yeah.
So that's it. All right. We're done now. We're kind of running long this episode, but thank you guys for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We tend to record the show on Hitbox, not Hitbox anymore, smashcast.tv/RealoT and twitch.tv/RealoT, usually Wednesdays around 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To stay updated on that stuff, in case we need to make a change, you can follow us on Twitter. @DavidMoirPodcast is the official account for the podcast, and your hosts are @RealoT and @YRulerOfTime. And you can also follow Annalise, our guest this week, hello, by following @Kaito_Ace. That's KAITOU_ACE. You can also check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on YouTube and leave a comment and rating so you can help us beat the woodworkers in the hobby section.
It is greatly appreciated, guys. Awesome. Anyone can do it.
If you want to send us feedback or ask a question for us to answer in our Q&A episode or suggest a future manga for us to read, the best way to do all that stuff is to send us an email. Send all that stuff to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. It's the best way for us to keep track of everything. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. And also something else, but I'll bring that up at a later time.
Yeah. Speaking of which, by the way, guys, special thanks to RedStar519, who is our newest patron. It is greatly appreciated. Boosh! Thank you very much for the support. Also, it's Net Neutrality Day, so make sure to send in your letters. Make your opinion be heard that you want to keep net neutrality an option.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It helps us to do this.
Yeah.
So.
Otherwise, Comcast can be like, I don't like these guys. They're annoying. Charge
them more. They're not as good as the woodworkers.
Yeah. The woodworkers need our help. Make these guys cost more to access. I'm like, no.
And lastly, thank you to the guys who help us make the podcast what it is. Infamous Planet, who creates the frame that you see around us. He also whipped up this special guest slot thing.
Yeah.
And, also to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work in a bunch of different places. Be forewarned that he does a bunch of NSFW artwork in addition to the title cards for us.
Titties.
Weep. All right. Is that it?
Yes.
That's
everything.
I want to just give a special shout out to Josh V, who is a deposit that Ray would believe it's very symbolic of the relationship between you and Annalise, because Annalise, you see, is in this bright light. And Nick, you are scouring right now in the shadows. There's a lot of beautiful symbolism tied in that, and I think that's quite important to note.
Anyway,
Nick's like, "Fuck you guys."